Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. For the second straight week, it's the Joe Show right now. The Coach K part hopefully will be showing up soon. But we've got a great line of guests today. We've got Jasper Athletic Director Andy Noblett. We're going to be talking some Jasper High School athletics. And then we're also going to be talking about some of the new IHSAA rulings. For instance, the homeschooled kids can start playing for the public schools, not the private schools. So we'll learn a little bit more about that. We're going to talk with Stu Schweigert, Purdue great, played in the NFL for the Detroit Lions, amongst other teams. Now he's the owner of an indoor football team, one of the arena football teams. And then we're also going to be talking to Jimbo Lamastis, Jasper native, ARCA driver, 50-year-old rookie that competed in Salem last weekend, and also is going to be competing at Talladega in a race tonight that you'll be able to watch on speed, and we'll learn a little bit more about how Bo and his race team are doing. We'll also be talking with The Rant with Kurt Guksel and Don Schultheis later in the show, and some of the hot topics right now in the world of sports being the NBA playoffs. I mean, the NBA playoffs have started, and other than the San Antonio Spurs, who won 4-0, and the Miami Heat, who won 4-0, there are a lot of series that have went 3-2 and 3-3 so far. Oklahoma City 3-2 over Houston right now. Memphis 3-2 over the Clippers. The Golden State Warriors won their series 4-2 over Denver. But you've got also on the east side, you've got Brooklyn and Chicago knotted up at 3. You've got my Pacers at 3 versus the Atlanta, who's won 2 games. And the Knicks have a 3-2 lead over the Boston Celtics right now. So I think we are joined by the coach here. Coach K, are you there?
I'm here, Joe.
There you are. Okay. He's here.
Yeah, NBA. And
yeah,
speaking of NBA, what about the Jason Collins outing, I guess, is probably up for discussion. It was big news. It's NBA playoff time. Was there a reason to announce it now? Was that the reason to get a little bit more publicity? Good, bad? What do you think?
Well, I think that it was a subject I was going to bring up today. And, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I'm sure that he's one of the few openly homosexual players in pro sports, but I would think that there were probably a few more, but I guess if you're a professional and doing your job, doing it right, I mean, I guess that should be a non-factor. I don't know. What do you think? What's your opinion?
Well, I think that the reason I bring it up is because obviously peripherally it's news, but I'm kind of like you. I don't know what that has to do with NBA or players or anything like that. His sexual preference, good, bad, or ugly, whether I agree with it, really doesn't matter. Can he play the game? I think we would both admit he's on the tail end of his career anyway. And mm-hmm. I guess it was important to him for his own sanity or whatever to announce that. I'm just going to say to our listeners, whether you agree with his sexual preference or not, I mean, in the end, he still was just an NBA basketball player to me, and that's really how I looked at it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I look at it, too. As long as he does it, I don't think he's you know, looking, sitting there looking in the showers for a partner, and you know, he lives his private life, you know, and he's going to go there and play the game he loves and the game he's been successful at, and you know, it doesn't change his ability as an NBA player at all. And you know, a lot of people, there have been a couple people that have come out on ESPN that are against it, but there've been as many, if not more. I've heard a Karl Malone interview, you know, where he was fully supportive of him. You know, but you're always, no matter what you do in life, you're always going to have some detractors.
I guess for me, Joe, I don't know that there's anything to come out against or come out in favor or boo him or applaud him for it. I think sometimes we're making bigger. I mean, is he a hero because of it? Is he any more of a hero than somebody that comes out and says I'm monogamous in my marriage? Is he any more different than AC Green was a few years back when he came out and said, I'm still a virgin and I'm saving that when I get married? He was an NBA player. I think sometimes the season of the year dictates how important the news becomes. And right now there was kind of a lull in there. So let's jump on this and say, look, he's the first NBA player first player in a major sport to come out while he's still playing or still viable to admit this. And I guess in a way it gives people the courage to be who they are. But I think in another way it goes back to the overhyping of people's personal lives and individual lives by the media. And, you know, some of these guys announcing, some of these guys that are SportsCenter analysts, some of these guys that are at the news desk reporting this stuff, I wonder what their personal lives are like. So, I don't know. For me, it was benign. It wasn't a big thing. I mean, I have my personal beliefs on it. I have my feelings on it, but in the end, it just seems like it was something to hype up. I mean, I hope things work out. I hope he can go on with his career and not have many problems. I hope that people are just sensitive that a lot of individuals, whether you play pro sports, whether you are CEOs of companies, whether you're just the guy working on the line in the Toyota plant, you know, there's different things in people's personal lives that maybe need to just stay personal.
Yeah, you know, you nailed it right on the head there. And, you know, before I go get Andy Noblet, I've got a question that I just had texted into me just for you. I don't know much about the kid, so I'll ask a question, and you can you're an IU fan, so you might have a better grasp of this, okay? Coach K, do you agree with adding Dante Exum in January? Do you know much about this situation?
I know just a little bit about it. I don't know much about him as a player. I guess the real question is, do you bring a person on in the middle of the year? Basically, is that what the question is about?
Yeah.
I don't know if the player is capable and that's the time to come on, well, that's not the issue. The issue, I think, more is, does he fit in to what we're doing? And when we bring him in to the mix, is he going to change the chemistry of the club, or is it going to create some problems? Well, I don't know about that. I think that can happen no matter who you have. You know, you could have a player, let's put it this way, you could have a player injured early on, and he can't play the first half of the season. So once he's healthy and ready to go, you start bringing him in to the mix. So To me, I think it's more of the preparation. How you have prepared the team for the addition when it happens. How the mix is going to work. Everybody needs to be on board. Everybody needs to be communicated with. Everybody needs to be able to understand the situation. You know, right now for IU.
Coach?
Oh.
Hello,
I heard a little mix there. I wasn't sure what was going on.
Okay. I just got back. Do you finish answering the Exum question?
I basically said, let me basically end it with this. I think that it wouldn't matter who it was or what time of the season it was. It's how you prepare. And teams in IU's situation are going to have a lot of change throughout the season because of the mix of players they have anyway. And so it's not like it's going to be a set situation and then we're going to remove somebody and bring another guy in. It's going to be a growth process the entire year, and as long as communication is there, preparation is there, it's not going to matter. So go back to you, Joe.
Okay, well, I don't know much about the situation. I had to ask the question, and I really am not familiar with the kid, so I'll have to go back and listen I'll have to go research who he is and et cetera. So, but Coach, when we come back, we've got Jasper, AD, Andy Noblet. We're here to talk a little bit about the new gym. And then also there's been some IHSA rulings as far as homeschool kids and all that, and kind of get a little explanation on all that when we come back, okay?
Hey, you know, it sounds good. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Hamburger? No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato chips.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joel Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. And, you know, Coach, when I used to think of prom, I used to think of you and I and Doug Koontz going to the prom with our dates and night back in 1981. But, you know, lately when I think of the prom, I think of the Jasper High School gym. It was shortly after, the day after the prom 2 years ago, that the gym collapsed, and we're joined now by Andy Noblet. We're getting ready to open up a brand new, sparkling, beautiful new gym, and wanted to get a little update on that. Andy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Joe. Appreciate it. And Coach, that sideline's ready for you. We enjoyed having you at the youth tournaments in town this year, and I know you'll be back next year. And I wish you the best on your coaching career with those youth kids.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Andy, it was a lot of fun, especially to go into the Cabby Gym with obviously my dad, former Jasper coach and athletic director Ed Schulteis, working with me and then coaching my son and all the other little guys. And Jasper ran a great tournament, and it was fun to go in the Cabby and say that the Schulteises got their victory on that floor again.
That is a great great thing to do whenever you see three generations come together and share basketball. That is that's a big part of playing basketball, sharing, and definitely getting to coach together and play together is something special.
Well, let's talk about this new gym. And anybody that's been in Jasper over the last 6-7 months has been watching this thing go up. And I know during the youth tournament, we played in the auxiliary gyms, which, my gosh, for most people, that would be more than any gym they've ever had. But but it was kind of boarded up as the construction was going on. And I know a lot of people that listen in the Indiana, southern Indiana area are interested in the progress on the gym and where things stand at this point.
Well, the first part, the neat part, is that they actually have an area that, that you can see part of the new cafeteria extension. One thing at Jasper High School is we had three lunch periods now with a new extension onto the cafeteria. We'll be able to continue something that we started 2 years ago, and that was to try to get kids within two lunch periods. So it's going to allow us to supervise our kids in that lunch situation and afford the kids an extra 10, 15 minutes at lunch to be able to sit down, enjoy a meal, and also maybe get some homework and visit with friends. I think that's a really cool part. And then the gym itself, I think, is it's coming along. The only thing that there is to finish down on the floor for graduation is our lower banks of bleachers. They are wraparound bleachers that wrap around on two corners so that we have a bowl feel. And then one single set of northern bleachers that looks like they'll be the first ones to be completed and then rolled back so that we can put up a graduation stage.
You know, we all look back to that terrible situation that happened with the roof caving in, and just had it been just a few hours earlier, a number of kids could have been involved, a number of young people. After going through that very emotional time, you know, people may not realize how emotional that was, but there was the what ifs. And then there was the tradition and the people that had gone through there. So it was very emotional. But it seems like the process, Andy, and I have to give you credit, your administrative team from superintendent on down, have just done a great job of making this really a seamless process, at least on the outside looking in.
Well, we appreciate the compliments. It has been something that when the gym fell, just ensuring there was no one in there at that time. As you know, our school tends to be utilized from about 5 in the morning till about 10 o'clock at night on most days. And we did have some fortunate people who chose that day to walk in the auxiliary gym instead of being in the main gym. And fortunate for all of us that there wasn't anybody in that facility when it collapsed. I was one of the first on scene. I think most of the people that were there were in disbelief. And since that time, the leadership of Dr. Gerald Van Dievener and now with Dr. Tracy Lori at the superintendent positions, they have taken us from basically a facility that was in ruin to a place that has even fixed some of the things that people had long-time complaints about. And we're going to provide a lot of things that are different, and so it's going to take us some time to get used to, but I think those things that we've changed have tried to make the experience for our athletes and for our patrons a much better one.
You know, Andy, it just doesn't happen. I mean, there's a lot of planning from deciding what kind of facility you need. You know, is it going to be more PE? Are we going to put a nice, more of a arena together? All the people that have input, all the people that want to have input, and all the people that won't give you input until after it's done, and then they decide to give you input. But as a young athletic director, going through this process, what have you learned? Things that maybe you wouldn't have ever had an experience or hands-on experience with. What kind of things have you taken away from this process in really constructing a new gym from the ground up?
Well, I think it's the I think the starting point was in the initial collapse, the helpfulness of our coaches and the resolve that they showed during this time, both from losing their facility to having to try to collect the items that were left to being able to relocate them, and the people that came out on that morning to make sure that if the help was needed, that those coaches and their programs were taken care of properly. And that goes along with our booster clubs and everybody, even our athletes, have been a big part of that, of being able to transfer things so that we could make the cabby the experience it was, and our maintenance personnel who also assisted in making sure that when coaches weren't able to do the things that needed to be done, they were willing to give of their own selves to add on to their plate. And I think that's a big part of what we do here at Jasper High School, and also what we see. Another part that I think comes about is the amount of time and effort that people want to give to our school to be able to correct things and to make things best for our kids. And from the people that are spending the time actually pouring the concrete and putting in the lockers for us now, but also our coaches being willing to come in and look for at meetings and trying to come up with plans to make things in the new gym even better than what we had. And their willingness to give is such a big part of what they do as coaches. And, of course, they don't get paid very much, and a lot of people don't understand that. And then most of them do have full-time jobs that they're doing during the day, and you know, our teachers are teaching six periods a day. They get 50 minutes off during the day, and most of that time is probably taken from their academic side. And if they have spare time, they're willing to give it to our athletics during that time. So it is definitely a full day for them, and for them to go and above and beyond to make sure that we get something here that's going to be for our kids. I think that spells a lot about what the athletic department and everybody that surrounds it is willing to do to make things right.
And I think that's what separates what I call strong coaching staffs and winning programs from those that are just coaching and putting people out on the field or the floor of play. You know, coaches, people who really are driven to coach and make a difference, strap it up. They put those shoes on and they boots on and they strap them up, and they take the situation that is at hand and they work to make it better. Whether it be a great team that you make a championship team, whether it's a good team that you make a great team, whether you take a facility, this is what we've got, we're going to clean it up, we're going to clean it up ourselves, we're going to do the best we can, or whether it's working together to have input and move the project forward. You know, people have to give input, but then they have to be willing to be a team and say, okay, this is what we've decided on, we've got to move forward, and we've got to do it together.
Yeah, I think that comes, you know, a lot of our strength comes from previous coaches that we've had and the experiences they've had in our athletic programs. And anytime we can see a face that we know participated, we get a lot of support.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. And Andy, for our listeners, for the people in Jasper and in the area that'll come in there for games, just, you know, we haven't walked in the doors. Give us just a quick description of what we're going to see in the facility as somebody would walk through those doors.
Well, I can start with, first thing you're going to notice immediately is that we have a much larger playing surface all the way around. We will have the ability to play two full games of basketball side by side without having a common sideline, which most facilities do have a common center sideline, and we'll be able to play two independent games at the same time. That floor space is going to be big enough to be able to put four wrestling mats down without having to butt them up against each other, which creates space so athletes that are wrestling don't hit each other. We have the ability of having a new large center scoreboard to accommodate for, especially for our fans that are looking up and easily see that location. We've got an entire lower bowl with three exits within that bowl, so our bleachers are designed to increase hopefully a feeling of closeness, especially in some of our sports that don't bring in a whole bunch of fans. The fans will all be able to get down and surround the court and make it feel like a lot like Cabby O'Neill Gym does, just has that intimate feel. And then in the upper deck, we've got all concrete up there, so there are nine rows of bleachers that are raised, so that row number one is actually above the walkway, so that we can utilize, anybody that's in the front row can doesn't have to look or duck between people as other people move around the concourse. So it's going to make it feel like a stadium feel, especially with that upper deck. And we're hoping for big crowds, so we have a lot of people up in those seats. When you have 4,800 seats, sometimes I think it becomes a worry as how many people are going to get in here and how's it going to feel? And with some of those changes that we've made, we think that that's going to improve the experience for our athletes and also for our fans. And being able to to actually design your own gym. Another big change is making sure that our concession stands are accessible and our bathrooms are easily accessible. And at this time, I think one of the big things that people are going to notice is you're going to be able to go directly from the upper deck into the lower deck without having to exit the lower floor and then finding a stairwell that would take you up there. You can actually go from row 11 in the lower bleachers and onto the upper concourse just by taking one step. And I think it's going to make it better for everybody to get that kind of bowl feel within the gymnasium and hopefully create an environment that's better.
You know, one thing, Andy, that it sounds like to me, and I got this feeling from the beginning, and I was really concerned, I was really worried that it wouldn't happen in this construction, was that they took the time, the administrative group, the people that were involved, and obviously you were critical in that as well, took the time to look at this as an arena facility, something not just a makeshift square box, but something that enhanced not just the players playing, but enhance the experience for the fans. And a lot of times you don't get that. You get a group that really doesn't understand how the athletic game flows, that whatever sport it might be, how the fans are integrated into the game and how it can be enhanced for them in just moving around the gym, getting to their seat, making it simple and easy. And some architect sits there and draws something up and says, well, this is what most people are building right now, and they go ahead and do that. It sounds like you really took the time to go through and say, what makes a great arena that both players and fans can really appreciate?
Well, I think that comes from the experience from a lot of people, especially when you've seen the venues that we've been able to play in. If you've ever been to, and I'm sure, Coach, you got to coach at Newcastle and being in Seymour and seeing parts of each of the gyms that are out there, I would recommend anybody that's interested in seeing some of those old gyms too. We were able to come by a book. It was called Hoosier Gyms, where we were able to look at a whole bunch of different facilities and some of the older ones and even some of the newer ones, and be able to kind of compare what kind of things that we liked about those. And it made the decision process a lot easier when you have people on board that have seen those kind of facilities and tried to make things better for everybody involved. So, yeah, big thank you for all those people that took the time to go see maybe some facilities that we would like and others that we definitely were able to kind of eliminate design structures.
You know, Andy, as a coach, and I'm assuming, I don't know how much you can tell on this at this point, but one thing I always struggled with at the old gym was the lighting. I thought it was terrible. I thought in the dog days of winter, it made for a dreary practice. It probably caused me to get more fired up to kind of keep it going. But you go in a gym like Boonville, I think their lighting is tremendous in their gym. The cabbie is a great experience from a lighting standpoint. The floor is bright, everything's clear, and it just enhances that experience. Is that something you made a point to focus on, is to make sure you had the best lit facility that you could get?
Yes, we not only do we have to consider the brightness, but we also need to consider the cost and what's out there now with the new light bulbs that are energy efficient and the ability to be able to turn those from a dim setting to a high setting. And was very important to us. And one thing that I think frustrated a lot of people that were in the old gym was the necessity, I guess, to wait 15 minutes once those lights were turned off. So if a kid even wanted to come in to shoot and practice was over at 6 o'clock and you shut the lights off, there's no way to shoot for 15 to 20 minutes in the dark. We all have the ability now to flip those lights on like you do at home, to be able to turn on a light switch and for the lights to immediately come on and be able to possibly use it for situations where we'd want to show a video at some point and then flip the lights on. I think it's going to make for a better experience. And then overall brightness, They're a lot more lights themselves that are over the top of the court, and we've got some indirect lighting that's going to be on the concrete walls on the back of the upper deck, so you won't see it. We'll be have the ability to turn those off during gameplay as well, so that everybody in the stands knows the important part of what's going on, and that is seeing our athletes and seeing all the things that are going on the floor.
Well, and I know there are new guidelines on what bulbs can be used, and some bulbs they no longer make because of the inefficient energy and that they wear out. And I know in my time as executive director at Memorial High School in Evansville, we started the process of retooling the lighting in the athletic facilities, and there's all kinds of outstanding lighting, fluorescent-type lighting that you used to think of the old fluorescent-type lighting in a classroom. This is just 100,000 times better than it used to be, and it gives you the ability to control sections of the lighting and everything else. So it sounds like that you guys, the Jasper administrative group, took great input from people, did their homework, studied, and put themselves in a situation to put a first-class facility out there. And I got to tell you, I'm a little jealous, man. Man, I wish I was taking that team out on that floor in that new arena. That's going to be exciting, and it's going to be something you guys are all chomping at the bit when that opportunity comes.
Yeah, it almost kind of feels like you've turned in your homework and you can't wait to see what the teacher thought of your all the work that you've done, and our people are going to be able to. Be able to come in, we hope, on graduation to experience it for the first time. But we'd like to invite everybody out to our games as the year goes on and be able to come out to a volleyball game and see what that experience is like and make it to our girls' basketball games. And, of course, our boys' basketball games are usually well attended, and we want to increase that number too.
Andy, I really appreciate the time. If you could stay with us just a few more minutes. I know Joe and I'm interested in it as well. The IHSA has put out some new rulings. Of course, they reclassified and redid some sectionals in different sports, and the success rule went into effect, but also some rulings on homeschooling. And I'm gonna flip this over to Joe and let him take this part of the interview. But we'd like to hear a little bit about your thoughts on the direction that the IHSA is going on some things. Take it, Joe.
Okay, yeah, Andy, the IHSA this week has approved the homeschooling kids to be able to participate in sports, much like in Florida and some of the other states that have approved this. And I just wanted to kind of get – I don't know if you've looked into it a whole lot yet, or I just wanted to know what guidelines there would be in it for as far as safety, as far as someone not abusing the situation.
Yeah, Joe, one thing that we do as athletic directors is we attend each fall and each spring meeting with the IHSAA, and the spring meeting is when we are provided the information that will go in front of the executive committee about new rule changes, and this year there were about 22 of those, and the majority of them happen in similar sports. So it really meaning that there's really about 11 proposals, but because they happen in boys and girls sports, they double that number. One of them is Rule 12, Section 5 within the IHSA handbook. And for the first time, the IHSA is going to provide the opportunity for a student who's in a non-public, non-accredited school, which would include any kid who's being homeschooled, to participate within the IHSAA. What that really means is that the IHSA has been working with our legislature and the changes that are going within the educational system and are being, having some forethought about what that may bring in the future and to establish some rules for these kids who are choosing to be in these non-public, non-accredited schools.
Andy, one of the things that I've noted, in just because of my love for education as well as athletics and coaching, but it looks to me that we're going down a path that has some different break-off. They may merge together at some point, and hopefully that's going to happen, but there's some different directions you can go. And that is you've got the potential for students now to literally do their homeschooling online, through the state of Indiana. And I would assume, and I could be wrong, and maybe you can correct it, but I would assume the IHSA is looking at that saying, hey, education in the state of Indiana, as well as all over the country, is changing. And we're either going to have to be there for the beginning of it, or we're going to have to react and maybe not react well after all this stuff has got going and we haven't addressed it. I mean, students can literally be homeschooled or take their classes online for the most part through the state of Indiana, through the education system in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, as you know, not being traditionally educated is something that the IHSA really had to take a look at, and I think you are correct. I think you're on the right track that they better get ahead of this thing before they can't control some of the decisions that are going to be made. So I do have a couple of the stipulations that go with this attendance at the non-public, non-accredited school. Number one, they can only attend athletically the school in which the district that they reside. So that's number one. And they also have to prove that the eligibility rules that the public schools are following, that they will do that as well. Statement number two is that you have to actually be homeschooled and in that school for 3 years in succession before you can be granted eligibility. So a kid that is a sophomore in high school and decides that now it is time that I be homeschooled, that person would not be available to be eligible to play for their school while attending a homeschool situation for 3 years. So they would take their sophomore, junior, and senior year homeschooled, but then the following year, then they would be eligible. So I think what the IHSA is trying to do there is to continue to enforce the rule that because you drop out of a public school, you're not automatically granted access to the athletic programs. The students also must complete statewide exams, just like the kids that would be in a public school. That's stipulation number three. Number four, that person must provide grading periods, just like kids who are in school would have to. So there'd have to be correspondence between and shown between the homeschooled kid and the school that they're playing for. So they'd have to provide grades, which is something that often doesn't happen. And then the last one is a real kicker for those five rules, and that is that the student must attend and take at least one full credit subject within that member school building. So you traditionally can't just be homeschooled. You must be enrolled and take at least one credit within that school to be eligible to play in their athletic program.
You know, Andy, as an athletic director and a teacher yourself and myself with similar experiences in the past and who knows about the future, but when you have – I think it's good that they want the student, boy, male or female, to come into the school for a class. And I think it's good from the standpoint of them getting to understand the socialization process – to recognize positions, people in positions of authority at the school, not just coaches, but administrative, teachers, to get some socialization with the student body itself. And I think that's a wonderful middle ground. I don't know how certain parents are going to feel about it, but these young women and these young men, at some point, they're going to be out in the world, and in practice, they're going to be dealing with their teammates, and I think it's a great socialization opportunity, not just to socialize with kids, but to get to know the staff and the administrative team and the hierarchy that is within the authority of the school.
Yeah. My comment on that, Coach, is just that at least being enrolled for that one class, at least I think there'd be some administration authority then over that student, having an idea that they are they do have a principal and a vice principal and an athletic director that they're going to have to get to know and be able to interact with. I think that's going to be one of the main reasons for invoking that one full credit, because education-based athletics, and that's what we are in with the IHSA. It's education-based athletics revolves around our school and the network of administration within the school with the principal and having an athletic director to oversee all the different things that go along with the IHSA and their bylaws and their tournament system. I think that at least holds some integrity to that system. And whenever you're dealing with the IHSAA, that's what Bobby Cox will tell you. And Bobby, the commissioner, is going to tell you we are in education-based athletics and making sure that the educational process is available for these students, because we do know there are a lot of situations where kids can get plenty of athletics and they aren't centered around athletics. And they continue to pop up more and more, and a lot of people are choosing to go that direction, and that, again, is fine. But whenever we say the IHSAA, I think the education-based is something that a lot of parents are reaching out for, too. They want their kids to be educated in this process, not just be able to play sports.
Well, Andy, we certainly appreciate you being with us, and I got five or six other things we could talk about, but we're going to be respectful of your time. Last thing before we go, when can people in Jasper or people in the area expect those doors to open at that new gym?
Well, I would expect them to be on graduation night. I'd love to have them earlier, because I think we'll have a lot of people who would love to get in there and be able to look around and may not have to experience the parking lot being full on graduation night to see it that first night. But we will definitely have open times for our patrons and for everybody that would like to be when they're stopping by. Nice thing about being the athletic director is you're here year-round. So I would offer people that feel like they need to get into that gym, hey, we're here in the summer, especially between 8 and 12 during the summertime. If you need to get in and want to see it, we'd be glad to show it to you, and we'll find a way to make sure that everybody gets kind of that first feel before they come to our events.
Once again, great stuff. If people want to know, they just need to get to the Coach K and Joe show, and they'll know. They'll know what's going on, and we know all about the new Jasper gym. And Andy, I know that Bob Hackert, assistant superintendent, is leaving. He just took a job as a superintendent at White River Valley, and so we wish him luck. But most of all, we want you back, because we've got other things to talk to you about, and we want to ask you about the future of the Cabby O'Neill gym next time.
That would be great, Coach. I appreciate it. And, again, thanks to all the listeners that are keeping the athletics on everybody's mind. I know that's a big part of the people that I associate with, and I know they appreciate you doing these kind of things, Coach.
Hey, all my best to your lovely wife and your kids, and thanks for being with us, Andy.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Coach, and I will tell them for sure.
Thank you. Hey, when we come back, we've got an all-time Purdue football great, and Joe will be talking with him. And stay tuned. Stay tuned, because you got to hear this one. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, we just want to say to all you other drivers out there, if you smell a delicious, crispy smell after the race, and it's not your tailpipe, it's a little bit of shake, and then wait, shake and bake. That's what you say.
Get used to hearing it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. And we're also joined by one of Joe's favorite Purdue athletes ever, freshman Big Ten Player of the Year, Big Ten Player, All Big Ten Player, Oakland Raiders. Now he's turning into an owner of a football team. But we've got Stu Schweigert on the line. Stu, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joe. Joe, you forgot the big one. You forgot the all-time interception leader there at Purdue.
Oh, well, how could I forget that? I got to witness many of those in person, so those were great. But, you know, Stu, I wanted to kind of talk to you about, you know, your career, and then we can get into what you're doing now. You know, when you started as a, you know, an option quarterback, you know, Saginaw Heritage High School, and, you know, while you were being recruited, were most of the interest for you at your safety position, or were you an aspiring quarterback as well?
Well, you know, some considered me an athlete. You know, obviously there were some schools, Notre Dame, Syracuse, Indiana was one. They ran the option. So I did get some looks at option quarterback. Also had some looks at wide receiver. I know at Purdue, obviously the offense that they ran wasn't an option style offense. Of course, they had a pretty good quarterback who was going into his senior year that year. So my chances of playing quarterback at Purdue were pretty much slim to none. So, you know, looking at it back, I thought, you know, well, my goal is to get to the NFL, and option quarterbacks, when they get to the NFL, do one of two things. One, they either play defensive back, or two, they play wide receiver. So I said, you know what, let's make the switch now, and, you know, let's go to the defensive back side of the ball. But, you know, coming out, I was actually more of an offensive player. I considered myself an offensive-minded type guy. And defense was just something I did because I was fast and athletic, and I never wanted to come off the field, so... I really honed in my skills at defensive back when I got to Purdue.
Now, you know, I remember when I first heard about Stu Schweigert, you know, I'm a Golden Black Illustrated knucklehead, and, you know, reading about the recruits, and all of a sudden I read Stu Schweigert, and I read, one of the things I read is he wins the Michigan State track tournament, track event in the 100-meter, and you beat what a lot of people would know is a very good athlete himself, Michigan State's Charles Rogers. And what other events did you possibly do in track? And
well, you know, track was something I absolutely loved. I ran the 100, I ran the 200, ran the 4x2 relay, and ran I anchored the 4x2 relay and anchored the 4x4 relay. And, you know, that year when I won the 100-meter dash, it was the first time a white guy had won the Class A Michigan 100-meter dash state championships in 1966. And you probably could have heard a pin drop in that arena that day. I mean, it was an amazing day. It was a day I'll never forget. It kind of really pushed me up into the recruiting ranks. I mean, once you have a guy, you know, I was a pretty big guy. You know, I was 6'2", 200 pounds in high school, and to run a 10.50 electric, it was actually a Michigan high school state record at the time, which was eventually beat the next year. But at that time, no one had ever ran that fast in a state final meet. So, and then also our 4x4 team, we won a state championship in that. And our 4x2 team finished second in the state behind Saginaw High and Charles Rogers. So track was a huge thing back then. Me and Rogers would actually have, you know, this is a dual track meet now. We would have 6,000 or 7,000 people come watch us run in a dual track meet. Nick Saban and Lloyd Carr and Barry Alvarez and all these guys would actually come to our track meets in the spring to watch us run. I mean, it was nuts.
So, my son runs track, and we don't quite have that kind of attendance at our track meets. But you know, you're a senior at a Saginaw Heritage High School, and, you know, you start getting interest from colleges. And, you know, take us kind of through the recruiting process and how it was like, and also – what attracted you to Purdue and Joe Tiller in particular?
Well, you know, I actually got offered a scholarship to play at Michigan my sophomore year, after my sophomore year of high school. I went down there for their camp, you know, and they have this huge camp, and, you know, there's 3,000 kids there, but they also had special invites where kids come down, it's a day thing, and they get to meet the coaches, and they had this thing called the Burn House or something. It was in their indoor facility, and they take their top seniors or going to be seniors, or they'd be juniors at that time. They take their top juniors and they run a 40-yard dash. Well, Fred Jackson, who's still there now, is my recruiting coordinator. He's the running backs coach there at Michigan. I said, you know, he said, Stu, would you wanna run this thing? Obviously, you're not eligible for it, but I'd like to see you running this thing. So, you know, you're in there, and Michigan invites all of, you know, there's a ton of other colleges there, you know, throughout the state, throughout the country that come to this camp. Obviously, Michigan's got a huge camp, and so he sticks me in this thing, and I got put with the quarterbacks. I mean, I think I beat every quarterback. This is a 40-yard dash. I think I beat every quarterback by almost 10 yards. And, they're wondering, well, who's this kid? Because I'm not on any of the list because I'm a sophomore at the time. So, they kind of shuffled me away real quick or whatever. But, I was up in Lloyd Carr's office, and they said, well, Stuart, I'm sitting there. They had just won the national championship. I'm like 16 years old. It's me and Lloyd, and he's talking about, would you like to come to Michigan? Would you like to be a Wolverine? I'm sitting there going, well, yeah, of course I would like to be a Wolverine, this and that. And, I leave, and they're heavily recruiting me. And then, of course, Michigan State and Purdue and, all the other schools follow. Pretty much every school in the Big Ten, then you had Nebraska, Syracuse, Stanford, Notre Dame, were kind of the schools outside the Big Ten. But I kind of made it known I wanted to stay in the Midwest. I wanted my family to be able to come to the games. And obviously growing up in Michigan, I'm a big, big, Big Ten guy. I wanted to keep that rich tradition and play in the Big Ten. And so going through the recruiting process, I really liked Michigan State. I really liked Purdue. I really liked Wisconsin. I really liked Notre Dame because, again, Notre Dame still had that quarterback aspect. And, my dad is from South Dakota, so they really didn't have, a big college team out in South Dakota. So he always grew up a Notre Dame fan, and I remember going through kind of the process. You've got to start to eliminate some of these teams, and I kind of crossed Notre Dame off the list. My dad says, whoa, hold on now. You have the opportunity to be the quarterback at Notre Dame. Let's think about this a little more, Stu. And I said, Dad, it's not something I want to do. So, I took four official visits. I went to Michigan State. I went to Purdue. I went to Wisconsin. And I went to Notre Dame. And kind of a recap, I really liked Nick Saban at Michigan State. Now, this was a guy who coached defensive backs in the NFL. And I'm sitting there going, well, I mean, as a college coach, to have someone who was in the NFL, I mean, what better experience than this guy? Also, when I went down to the practices, it was the first – I mean, I had been to all these schools, and the head coach is always on the offensive side of the ball. That's just how it is. And I went to Michigan State, and Nick Saban was on the defensive side of the ball, and specifically – in the secondary, I was thinking, wow, here's a head coach who's actually coaching the defensive backs on the defense. I said, that would be a beautiful opportunity to learn from a guy who was in the NFL. So I really liked that aspect of it. I went down to a game. My official visit was the following week. Nick Saban's talking about, I'm not going anywhere. I'm a Michigan State guy. That following Tuesday, my athletic director pulls me into his office, and I have the TV screen on, and I'm sitting there at a big press conference. Well, it's Nick Saban announcing he's going to LSU. So I'm sitting there going, okay. So then Bobby Williams comes about. And I just didn't like anything that Bobby Williams really had to say. I went down there, kind of ignored me a little bit, kind of had his guys. And I just didn't like where he was going to take the program, which I have personally, I have no problem with Bobby Williams. But, he's talking about letting the guys wear earrings, and he's going to let the guys do this. And I'm sitting there going, I'm not about that. I'm about structure, and it's just not what I want to do. But one thing that I really liked about Purdue was I felt they were actually the first school to give me an option of playing defensive back, playing wide receiver, and playing special teams. We went down there on a junior day, and the whole coaching staff pulled me and my parents into the players' lounge. They had this big TV screen on, and they actually had a DVD. And Jim Chaney was the one kind of running it. Brock Spack was my recruiting coordinator, and obviously you guys know defensive coordinator at Purdue when I was there. Okay, baby, hold on one sec. And so we're in there, and they put this video on, and it's cutouts of things that they see me doing at Purdue. This is what we see you doing on offense. This is what we see you doing on defense. This is what we see you doing on special teams. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is awesome. And then once I started kind of telling the other recruiters that, they kind of followed suit and kind of, well, you can do the same thing here. And I'm thinking, well, you didn't come up with the idea. Purdue came up with the idea. And I felt that Brock Sack and Chaney and Tiller were really the guys that I was talking to. I hadn't even met the position coach. And I'm sitting there going, this is the type of attention that I'm getting from Purdue. And the thing I really liked about it is during the bowl practices, during my official visits, it was Notre Dame's last game. It was Wisconsin's bowl practices. It was Michigan State's bowl practice. I think they were going down to Orlando to play in the Capital One Bowl. And Purdue was going to play in the Outback Bowl. And as I'm going down to these trips, I'm sitting there and I'm at practice, and it just seemed like the football players work. It seemed like the guys weren't having fun. They didn't want to be there. But when I went to Purdue, it was a completely different story. I mean, at practice, guys were joking. Joe Tiller and the coaching staff were having a good time. It seemed like guys wanted to be there, and it seemed like guys were having a good time playing football. And that, you really had that kind of home-type family atmosphere with Purdue. You know, Joe Tiller comes in your house, and it's like your grandpa just walks in the door. And just got a really good feeling. Of course, Arnett did a wonderful job of kind of being your mom away from home. And, you know, being that young and going, you know, 6 hours away and not knowing anybody, that was kind of a good feeling to know that if I did, and I didn't really care about, you know, having that mom atmosphere, but it was also nice to know that if I did need it, it was there for me. So Purdue, mm-hmm. I just felt they were the most honest. Obviously, I thought they were a team on the rise. They had a lot of talent coming back. You know, with Drew Brees becoming a senior and the success they had the seasons before, you know, and it was also an opportunity where I thought I could play there the fastest. You know, I didn't want to sit. Of course, you can't beat Purdue's education. And then probably the last deciding factor was my number is number 9, and number 9 was available. So, you know, it made the decision pretty easy.
Well, that, you know, for all you knuckleheads listening, the gripe that we haven't won any recruiting battles over Michigan State, Notre Dame, et cetera, we won a big one right here with Stu. So,
well, I tell you this, to this day, that's the number one question I get. How in the hell does a guy from Michigan not go to Michigan or Michigan State and goes down to Purdue University? How does that happen? Oh, you know what? Let me finish now about Michigan. Michigan got upset because I didn't verbally commit. They wanted me to verbally mm-hmm. commit. So when I told them I'm going down to Purdue, I'm going to Michigan State, I'm going to Notre Dame, they're going, well, what are you doing that for? Why are you taking these visits? And I said, well, I want to go down there and cross them off the list. I want to compare them to Michigan because I thought I was going to go to Michigan. And Fred mm-hmm. Jackson is going, well, Stuart, you verbally committed to Michigan. And I'm sitting there going, well, no, I didn't. Well, didn't you sit in Lloyd Carr's office and say you're going to Michigan? So, well, I said I wanted to play at Michigan. I never said I was going there. He goes, well, what are you calling Lloyd Carr a liar? You know, I'm a 17-year-old kid on the phone. I'm sitting there going, what is going on here? I said, well, I'm not calling him a liar, but – and he kind of got upset with me. And from December of my junior year till December of my senior year, Michigan had no communication with me whatsoever. Never talked about a scholarship – or I'm sorry, never talked about an official visit, never brought me down to games. Then all of a sudden, about 2 weeks before the signing date, Jackson calls me up and says, Stu, hey, it's Fred Jackson. You know, just wanted to see what was going on, how you feeling. And I basically ripped into him. And the end of the conversation, he said, well, listen, here's Lloyd Carr's home phone number. He's got a scholarship waiting for you. Give him a call. Well, obviously, you know this. I never made that phone call, and it was the best decision of my life. So, but that was kind of the whole deal with Michigan. That's the biggest question I get. How did you not go to Michigan? So when we played Michigan my freshman year, you know, we were down, what, 28 to 10 or whatever it was, or 28-3 or whatever, going into halftime, and
mm-hmm.
the Michigan fans were sitting there yelling, why you wish you would have went to Michigan now, you dumb, you know, ASS, and why didn't you come here, and all this stuff. So when we came out the second half to beat them, it was a great game. So whenever we're up here, I know when Hope beat Michigan at Michigan for the first time, what, 66 it was, or 68,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was, me and my wife was also a Purdue alumni. She ran track at Purdue. We went to every bar in Saginaw with our Purdue varsity jackets on, our Purdue hats, our Purdue-issued sweatpants. I think I had my Rose Bowl ring on. So it was a fun time. So whenever Purdue can beat the Michigan teams, we enjoy it up here.
Well, you know, you go on, you have a great career at Purdue. You know, you were the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, first team all Big Ten twice, second team all Big Ten twice. You're the interception career leader at Purdue. You're also, we didn't point this out, you were a Playboy All-American. And,
yeah.
You know, had a great career at Purdue, got to play in 4 bowls. Then you went on to, you know, get drafted 67th
overall. Let me make one more point that kind of gets lost in the shuffle there. I graduated in 3.5 years with a 3.1 GPA, so that's something
that's
I'm very proud of.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. And then, you know, from there you get picked 67th overall in the 2004 NFL draft by the Oakland Raiders. And tell me, you know, the difference. What's the difference between playing in college and then playing in the NFL where it is a job?
Well, one of the biggest differences is obviously the talent of the quarterbacks. You know, in college, you may be playing against a true freshman that, you know, just got the start because a senior got hurt, or, you know, you're playing against guys that, you know, really could be subpar players, you know, a redshirt guy or whatever the case may be. But when you get to the NFL, I mean, those quarterbacks, they're all on. And if you aren't in your exact position defensively, those guys will find it. I mean, those guys will find that open guy, and that'll get you cut before anything to do with your athleticism, anything to do with you not being fast enough or whatever the case may be. If you're out of position, that's the biggest difference. Is you've got to make sure you know the game and you study the game and you know what guys are doing in front of you. You know what guys are doing to the side of you. And again, you got to remember that it's a business, and those teams are out there to win championships and to make money. And if you start to mess with that a little bit, you know, you're going to be gone. So it's you don't have a grace period. You know, coming in at Purdue, you're there. You're there for 4 years, and those coaches will invest time in you because, you know, they invest time to begin with, and they've got time to develop you. So if you go out there in a game, you know, and you have a bad game, that's okay because, you know, there's still time to develop. With the NFL, if you go out there, you may have one shot. You know, as a rookie or a free agent type of guy, you know, let's say the starter gets hurt and they throw you out there, and it's your first game and you have a bad game, there's no, well, you know what, it was his first game, and, you know, let's give him a shot. Did he make the play or did he not make the play? And if he didn't make the play, the possibility is every Tuesday you got about 30 guys coming in that they try out, and most likely if you had a bad game, they'll sign one of those guys and you'll be sitting.
Okay, and you know, a lot of people, you know about your playing career. I mean, you know, I know everybody at Purdue definitely does. And but you know, Sue, why don't you tell our listeners, you know, what you've been doing since your playing days in the NFL?
Well, I played 3 years in the USL for the Omaha Nighthawks, which was a tremendous league. It was an opportunity. I played against John Stanford out there. Stanford Kegler was a guy who played in that league, and it's outdoor. It's the same exact rules as the NFL, and it gives guys an opportunity, as myself, to continue to play. It gives younger guys an opportunity to show coaches that they can play at a high level. It gives coaches an ability to kind of learn their skill and develop their skills. While I was out there, I was UFL Defensive Player of the Year back in 2012. I led the league in interceptions and tackles that season, and loved playing out there. During my off seasons, I'd come home, and there's an indoor football team here in Saginaw. I was the general manager of the team back in 2011. In 2012, I actually got with some business partners of mine, and we bought the team. When we bought it, we kind of revamped it and made it as close to an NFL team as we possibly could, from the uniforms that we wear to the equipment that we buy to how our field looks, how our arena looks. We went 9-0. When I was the GM, we won the UIFL championship. When I was the owner last season, back in 2012, we switched leagues. We won the CIFL championship. We went 9-0. We're the third team in indoor football history to go 9-0, or fourth team to go undefeated and win a championship. But the proudest thing that we like about that season was we gave back $91,000 back to the community of Saginaw. So that's the reason. Great. I bought the team. That's the reason I do it, to give back, to give kids an opportunity to have some good role models in the community, rather than, you know, Saginaw is a depressed area, and to give these kids a couple hours of entertainment to forget about some of the problems. And our deal is that we wanted to make it a family-friendly, fun, affordable environment. I mean, you're talking from 6 to 7 o'clock, there's a tailgate where you have face painting, balloon animals, drink specials. There's a DJ playing music, so it's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
From 7 to 7:30, we have pregame activities from 7:30 till about 9:45. You have the game. We're pulling people out of the stands. We're doing armchair quarterbacks, wheelbarrow races. We have a halftime show. After the game, fans get to come down onto the field. Players sign autographs, take pictures. And you're talking about 4 hours of entertainment for a $10 ticket price. Now, I went to the movies with my daughter a couple weeks ago. We went and saw The Cruise or whatever, and we stopped at Subway. And we got some dinner, and we got some cotton candy and popcorn and pop, plus the ticket. I think I spent $60 for about an hour and a half of entertainment. You know what I mean? So we provide a value for our community. So right now we have our first playoff game tomorrow. We last season, the CIFL, the league that this thing we're in, we actually bought that league. The ownership group that I have with this thing, we bought the entire league because we wanted to kind of really pick up the talent level. Some of the teams we were blown out, you know, by a significant amount. And yeah, that's good to win games, but it's not good for the fans. So we wanted to go out and hand select some of these teams. So we have 10 teams in 5 states. We've got 6 teams that want to join the league next year. Our season's going well. We play tomorrow against Dayton. And actually, our old quarterback from the last 2 seasons is a Hoosier. His name's Tommy Jones. He played quarterback and tight end for Indiana. He's a year older than I am. He's kind of the Brett Favre of the indoor league. I think last season the guy scored for over 100 touchdowns. I think he scored 12 touchdowns in our championship game last season. Well, he's playing for Dayton. That's the team that we're playing tomorrow. So it'll be his first time coming back up here to Saginaw. So it's going to be a great, great game. On top of that, I own a limousine company. I have a 1983 MCI Detroit diesel 55-passenger bus that I completely gutted, turned into a limousine. So that business is going very well. I have a personal training business called Impact Training by Stuart Schweigert. I train high school kids, middle school kids, college athletes. I teach them the fundamentals of running as far as stretching, conditioning, strength training, life skills, you know, trying to help these kids be productive members of society. So we do it all in that. I have an apparel company called Impact Apparel by Stuart Schweigert. And we do football, baseball, basketball, track, wrestling, coaching shirts, bags, anything to do with any type of sports as far as uniforms go is we provide that. We customize anything that you have. And I also have Impact Scouting by Stuart Schweigert, where we have combines that finds talent for the NFL, the CIFL, which is a league that we own, the CFL, the UFL, and we hold combines and kind of provides us a way to bring in talent to our league. And my main goal of our league is to make it the premier league in the country, and the connections that I have in the different leagues is I can, the guys for something, you know, I can send the film in and say, hey, listen, here's a guy you need to take a look at. And it carries more weight than just some, you know, some coach that ended up buying a team and said, hey, here's a guy I got, because they're probably not going to listen to him. So that's one of the things I want to develop these players. Right now we have a guy, Nate Williams, who's a defensive end of ours. Most likely after this game, he's going to get signed by the Detroit Lions. He just graduated from Central Michigan University. They're going to have him come in for a mini camp. We have another receiver who's just getting picked up by the San Antonio Talons in the AFL. So things are starting to go very well. We're starting to get recognized throughout the country that we got talent in our league and we know how to run it. And if guys come to our league, they'll have an opportunity to move on and go.
Now, let's see. The CIFL, you know, we're based. We have listeners from all over, but we got a lot from Southern Indiana. And looking at the website, you have a team in Louisville, and I noticed an Owensboro logo. Is that one of the new teams, or is that a team that's playing right now?
Their season is done. They're not in the playoffs anymore. So the Owensboro Rage, they were a team. Actually, Jared Lorenzen was playing for them for a little bit. The quarterback that played at Kentucky played for the New York Giants. Owensboro, you have Louisville, Kentucky, you have Eastern Kentucky, we have Kane County, Illinois, we have Marion, Ohio, we have Dayton, Ohio, we have Erie, Pennsylvania, we have Saginaw, Michigan, Port Huron, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan. Fort Wayne, Indiana actually signed their papers and sent in their league dues and registrations for 2014 a couple months ago. So they're joining the league. Possible teams such as Rochester, New York is joining. Lexington, Kentucky. Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. Green Bay, Wisconsin. So we've got some legitimate teams that are excited about joining our league because we provide a service. We don't just take your league dues and, hey, you know what, see you, good luck. If you fail, you fail, but we have your money. We go down and we show these teams how to promote their games, how to get the community involved, how to sell sponsorships, how to get their players and develop their players and how to coach their players. If they have legal issues, we have an attorney that can call and, you know, that they can have questions to that we have, you know, on staff. So we want to provide these guys with a service because, again, like I said, just some of these leagues, you pay a due and you don't hear from the league anymore. They just want your money, and if you fail, you fail. They're okay. They don't mind. They'll just find a new team. And I think that's one thing that attracts some of these other teams into our league right now.
Well, I do know we have a Jasper, Indiana. That's where we're located at. Jasper, Indiana, a connection with Brent Adams from Jasper, actually is one of the coaches for the Louisville team in your league.
Oh, so Kentucky Cream?
Yes, there is a
local
connection.
Yeah, well, we're
hoping,
Kentucky's going tomorrow or Sunday to play Erie, and if they can beat Erie, then we'll have a championship game in Saginaw. Obviously, we play tomorrow, but the following Saturday up in Saginaw, and they have a good team down there. We went down to Louisville, and we were down 28-10 at halftime, ended up coming back to win with the last-second touchdown.
Now,
they got some talent down there. They're a good team.
Yep. I got two things to go here. I'm going to ask you about the camp you're going to work at, and then I want to ask you one last question. June 21st, 22nd, you're going to be down in our area. You're going to be at Heritage Hills High School,
yep.
And you're going to be at the Southern Indiana Football and Life Skills Youth Summer Camp that John Goldsberry is organizing.
Yeah, well, just for everyone out there, John Goldsberry was my roommate my freshman year of college, and one of my best friends, a tremendous guy, tremendous athlete, tremendous player back in high school, guys, football, wrestling, and track. The guy was an absolute stud, and a guy who could throw up some serious weight, and for what he's doing and the players that he's bringing in and the amount of money that he's raised for this to make this thing happen, I think is absolutely tremendous. I have a foundation called Stu's Crew that I also help out with, and I know putting on some of these camps and trying to raise money is not an easy thing to do, and it takes a phenomenal person like John to go and take the time, because John's got, he's got a family of his own and a full-time schedule, and to go out and do this and plan this and schedule this to provide something for these kids, these high school kids and youth kids, I think it's huge, because right now in America, there's a lack of, there's a lack of disability or discipline, I think. There's a lack of proper role models, and this is what John is providing for these kids to come down there. Yeah, we're going to learn some football stuff, and, we're going to learn some drills and have fun and run around. But the thing I want these kids to do is ask some of the guys that are down there, ask them questions, ask me, myself, or John, come up and ask us, why did we do this, or, hey, I'm struggling in school, or ask us anything you want, because that's what we want to teach these guys is, how to be responsible, how to, first of all, grades is number one. These schools nowadays, if you don't have the grades, they don't care what type of athlete you are. They're not going to put up with a kid coming in that's going to flunk out. They're not going to spend the money on doing it. So these kids, they see these reality TV shows where these people get rich and famous for being idiots and not doing anything. And there's steps to becoming successful. It's not going to be overnight. And, I talk to people all the time, when I was a freshman in high school, I just wanted to be a varsity player. When I became a varsity player, I wanted to be all-conference. When I became all-conference, I wanted to be all-state. When I became all-state, I wanted a scholarship. And I just kind of, every time I met one of those goals, then I reached a new one. And you talk to these kids nowadays, and it's like, well, I want to play in the NFL. Well, what are your steps? Are you even starting? Well, I'm not even starting on the JV team right now. And I'm thinking, you've got a long way to go here if you're not even starting on the JV team. Why don't you, instead of thinking about the NFL, let's just think about you becoming a starter on that JV squad. So to be able to get in front of these kids and to hear it from former professionals and former college all-stars and people who have been there and have done it and have been successful is a huge asset to these kids. So I hope they come and they learn some stuff, and I hope they have a good time, and which I think they will. But again, I think it's more important about getting in front of us and asking us questions and them learning, how to be, again, I said it before, productive men in their communities.
Lastly, and I told him I was going to do this. I told him he could call in and defend himself, and he's not called in. But what's your favorite John Goldsberry story, since he's the local guy?
What? He texted and I said, John, God, I got so many of them. I'm trying to pick one there's quite a few that I really can't tell on the radio. So, but I can remember this. John, for whatever reason, let's say, we had class at 7:30 in the morning. As a football player, you always had to have your classes early because you had practice and everything in the afternoon. And I can remember, I had class at 7:30. I think I'd get up at 7:15. brush my teeth, throw on some sweat, boom, I'm out the door, I'm riding my bike to class. John took literally about an hour and a half to get ready in the morning. He was like a female. I mean, he set the – I mean, we say class at 7:30. John's getting up at 6. So his alarm's going off, and he kind of sits there in his bed, and he's looking down. I'm sitting there, is he going to shut that darn alarm off? It's just beeping forever. And he's sitting there, and he's kind of rubbing his head, waking up. But then he finally shuts the alarm off. Then he turns every light on in the dorm. And we're in Wiley Hall. These are little tiny dorm rooms, you know. Then he turns on every light. Then he's making oatmeal in the microwave, so the oatmeal is going off. Then he has his computer, and he would always talk to his girlfriend's mom and his girlfriend on the computer in the morning. And the way you knew if someone was on this, the doorbell would ring. So I'd hear ding dong, and then you'd hear like a knock knock, which meant like they were trying to get a hold of you. Then if they left the room, like the door would shut. So from 6:15 to about 7 o'clock in the morning, all I hear is ding dong, knock knock. These doors are shut, and I'm going, would this guy just get the heck out of this room and go to class so I can get some sleep? You know what I mean? And this was an every morning thing. And then I'm going, this guy, okay, he's a freshman scholarship athlete at Purdue, big time football player, Johnny Football, just a stud. And he's going out with this sophomore in high school, and he's got like her pom pom pictures up everywhere. And I'm like, I don't know about this guy that they got me rooming with right now here. So it was a little shaky at first, but, you know, me and John have a wonderful relationship. You know, we'll be friends forever. He's come up here a couple of times. I'm super excited to get back down there. Been to Santa Claus, Indiana, I think the summer after my freshman year. Had an absolute ball down there. Can't wait to meet his family and can't wait to see some of the guys that he has coming to the camp. So it's going to be a great thing. I want to say I appreciate you guys having me on. I'll come on whenever you guys want. Anytime I get a chance to talk about Purdue sports, I love it, because all I hear up here is Michigan State and Michigan and Stuart, who's going to win. I'm telling them, I don't care. I don't care who they're recruiting. I don't give a, you know what. So anytime I can talk Purdue sports, I love doing it.
That sounds great. And maybe in the future we can have you and your roommate on at the same time so we can, you know.
I don't want you having John and asking him his favorite Stuart Swagger story, okay? Okay,
we'll do that. But, hey, Stu, we'd like to have you back real soon, you know, and talk Purdue. We could talk you know, the league you own. You know, we've got some local connections with that as well. And
yeah.
We can go from there. So I'd thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yep, and we'll be back next with a Jasper native and ARCA racer, Jimbo Lamastis. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
That boy is a P.I.G. pig.
See if you can guess what I am now. I'm a zit. Get it?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. We are also added a classmate of ours from the class of 1981, Jasper High School, but he's better known as ARCA rookie, Bo Lamastis. Jimbo Lamastis, how are you doing today?
Hi, Joe. I'm good. Good, good, good. And you guys?
Doing great.
Doing well, Bobo. Glad to be able to be on and talk with you this time around.
Well, Kenny, I was starting to worry. I didn't know if, you know, overall you were avoiding me. But anyway, let's put that in the past.
Hey, let's talk racing. And I want to start this out because I didn't get a chance to talk to you the first time. I mean, here you are, and people, for our listeners, Bo, as we affectionately call him, has always been a very physical person from the standpoint. You like to get involved in physical athletics, big in motocross. At what point, Bo, do you sit there and say, all right, I played high school football, I've done track, I've done baseball, I've spent a decade in motocross, I think I'll go to car racing?
Well, it didn't exactly happen like that, but 6 years ago I got involved in car racing, and I was at the end of the line as far as racing motorcycles. I raced motocross for a long time, and for motocross, I got involved in the road racing, which was a ton of fun, and it was much easier on your joints. But every once in a while, you'd have a get-off, and I just kind of timed out age-wise. So I think when I was like 44, 45, I got into the car stuff, and I'd been doing all the sports car, FCCA, road stuff. So we would go to Watkins Glen, we'd go to Mid-Ohio, Road Atlanta, wherever. And, I still do that. But last year I was up at Road America and I was talking to somebody and he was telling me about the ARCA series coming up there. And anyway, that kind of planted the seed for me. So I started talking to a couple ARCA teams about just basically renting a ride for that weekend. And through all that, it kind of morphed into this whole effort of doing the whole season with ARCA. So anyway, it's a natural progression. And, in my shoes, I still have a lot of, just a competitive fire. And you want to, now that we're into this thing, you're wanting to see how high up the ladder you can go.
Yeah, and Bo, I want to brag on you for just a little bit. So just accept humility. For our listeners, you were a guy who is passionate about the things he does. You have a great personality. You're smart. You don't just come out of the blue and say, I'm going to race or I'm going to do motocross. I can remember for years when we were growing up and after you got into high school, your college years, it wasn't anything for you to just on your own put that trailer with your motocross bikes on and take off and go several hundred miles to race in some event. And people would say, well, where's Bo? He's racing this weekend. It wasn't anything that you went out and got all these people to push for you to do. It's just a passion inside of you to be competitive. And for our younger people and for our older people that listen, that never has to go away. And your competitiveness, your passion for what you did also spilled over into business. You built a great business up, which allowed you financially to pursue the racing passion that you have today.
Well, I wish I could say I totally agree with everything you said. But, back in the day, we all grew up. You guys were the same. We either played football, baseball, basketball. Some of us played all those sports. But Jasper was a very, very dominant stick and ball type of environment. We grew up in a great high school. We had all those close rivalries, be it Huntingburg and Dubois and all those places. But for me, I always rode these little dirt bikes, these little mini bikes. And my dad said, look, we're going to put that away. You're not going to touch that bike. And he told me, he said, once you graduate, he used to always call me brother. When we'd have these little talks, he'd say, now, brother, when you graduate, you take that bike and you go to the moon. He said, you go do your thing. And you know what? At the end of the day, that was such a blessing because the fire or the hunger that he instilled in me as far as when I did get out, we played the last baseball game we played up at Busch Stadium. And Joe, you were obviously a huge part of that team. Nobody Knows It. That was on a Saturday. On Monday morning, I was up at Mitchell, Indiana, at a motocross school. Went up there for like 8 days of just riding these dirt bikes. And to me, that's really when it all took off. I mean, it was such a shot in the arm. So, you know, to drive 100 miles, 200 miles, I can remember my first trip down to Florida by myself in the wintertime. Just flat out drove down to St. Pete Beach. There was a motocross down there. I no more knew what to do than a man in the moon. I just knew I had to be there. And so in that regard, you never, ever quit chasing your dreams. You know, and I think all those early days of the motorcycles was, you know, what a priceless beginning. So anyway, I feel extremely, extremely lucky that I can be doing what I'm doing. And yeah, and it's just a ton of fun. You just have to keep it in the right perspective. You know, and now you're trying to tie this whole thing into your business. You're trying to tie it into some of your partners and just mainly bring a lot of exposure to it. But I never like to go racing if I can't keep it fun. And if it's fun for everybody, you know, last night we're sitting there. We had a great qualifying day. Yesterday we ended up 10th on the board for today's race. And, you know, you're just sitting around with all these guys. We've got a great crew. There's probably 12 different crew members on the team. And it literally is. It's like high school again. Everybody's just sitting there. And, you know, there's so much camaraderie, and that part I totally love. So it's a lot more than just going out there and going in circles.
Yeah, I was on the ARCA site today, and I noticed that you guys had qualified for 10th, which was outstanding. And it's not like you're trucking around the track at 50 or 80 or 90 miles an hour. You're running around there at about 175 miles an hour. But for our listeners that really can't understand what that's like, I mean, when you're going at that speed, do you feel that? I mean, do you feel that speed, or is it just something that feels more like, you know, you're controlling that steering wheel? And I might mention to everybody that Bola Mastis is not just likes physical activities. You're a strong guy, and you've kept yourself in great shape, and you have to be in great shape mentally and physically to command that race car. But when you're traveling around there at 175 miles per hour, what's going through your mind and your body?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is, it doesn't feel that fast, right? It's kind of, in certain respects, it can almost be surreal. So let's say you're in a pack and everybody's going 175 or whatever the speed is. So it just gives you a very comfortable feeling. Where that speed comes into play is the minute something goes wrong. then you got a big problem. But the other thing you've got to watch out for is closing rates. So if you're coming up on, say, a lapper, if you're coming up on somebody who's got a problem, my God, you come up on them so fast, right? Because they might be going 50. They might stop. Who knows? And obviously, if you're going down the backstretch at 195 and somebody's sitting there, you know, sitting, if they're stopped and or they're moving at, you know, a slower speed, that's probably the biggest thing that, you know, you've got to be aware of. So as far as what it does to your body, like today will be 250 miles is our distance. And it's going to be hot. So, you know, I mean, you're going to sweat a ton. And you can really do well as my PR manager, Kenny. But I have stayed in decent shape. And, you know, on a day like today, you're out there for a long time. You know, I wouldn't say you're trapped in that car, but you sure as heck are. You're not going anywhere. And the more efficient your body is running inside that car, obviously, the greater attention you can pay to what's going on. So, you know, the biggest thing that wears you out in a car like this, in my opinion, everybody's like, man, do your arms get tired? And for me, it's mental. You know, you've just got to be on guard for 3 hours. And, you know, that would be the biggest thing that's in front of you today is you've just got to really be sharp and pay attention to what's going on. And, you know, and then you've got everybody in your ear from your spotters telling you what to do. you got to hit your marks as far as when you come in on the pit stops, because, you know, a day like today, it could be won or lost in the pits. So you don't want there to be anything stupid. So, you know, your concentration, you've got to be just right. And, you know, this thing's only as strong as the weakest link, and you sure as heck don't want the driver to be the weak link. So, anyway.
Yeah, and Bo, I think for our listeners, this is so much about every area in life when you're trying to be successful. You need to be able to communicate with your team. You know, as you were talking about, we grew up in a community with great competitors, not just in athletics, but it's a successful business community. I've coached against and coached with some pretty talented people, as well as coached talented people, and you're in that same situation, just on an even a greater level. You have to have some camaraderie with that team, which you were talking about. It's not a guy shows up when it's time to work and everything goes its way, and it's the same way with the drivers you're competing against. It's not some Joe Blow that came off the street and said, I want to race today. People need to know what they're doing. They need to be professional about it. They need to understand how the race is run, as well as compete and know the nuances. But it gets back to you as a team. You've got people in your ears. You've got a lead chief crew guy. You've got a guy letting you know what's going on in the race. Tell us a little bit about your team and some of the strengths of your team.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, a team, this whole sport mirrors a business application just straight up. And by that, I mean you do. You've got to have a great team. First, it starts with a crew chief. Your crew chief is basically, he's your head coach. So he's working everybody from your engineers to your engine package to your suspension guys to your core mechanics to all the spotters. He's in charge of everything. And, you know, my role, aside from being the driver, I'm also the team owner. So that kind of puts you above the crew chief. Yet, I'm the driver, and in that role, you're below the crew chief. So, you know, you wear a couple of different hats, and but I love watching the way a team goes together, and it's no different than a business. The more you can put into these guys, the more you can get them thinking a certain direction, and then you can sit back and really feel what's going on. And an example today, if we walked out of here with a top three, a top five, it would not surprise you at all. And that is strictly based on the team we put together. And, you know, they were out here last night at probably 7:30, 8 o'clock, still working on the car, still tweaking and playing in the pits, figuring out what the competition's doing. So, I mean, it's competitive all the way down to the very, very small details. So, I mean, and that's no different than business. You better know everybody on your own team and how to get everybody to gel and work together and improve. But you better know everything about the competition and everybody that's out there, because, you know, today when we take the field, I think there's 37 or 38 cars. So the more you know about those guys, the better. You know, in my shoes, I've got to know as much about the different teams, the different drivers, what are the strengths. There's a handful of cars that will fall away. In other words, they qualified good, but they're not going to race well. And, you know, so you just have to be mindful of everything. And that's, to me, that's what business is.
You really go into a battle of attrition when you get out there. And you know, just one quick comment about what you said, and I love what you said. Here you are, the owner of the team, the driver of the team, but yet when you get in that car and you get on that racetrack, you've got to trust your crew chief to become the leader of the group, of you yourself. And I think that speaks well to the management of the team in as far as in your respect. I trust the guys who I have on my team that I'm willing to step in my spot and let him lead me through this race.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, for me, I like that role. I like it when I get in as the driver. But when I met Aaron Brown, my crew chief, he used to be with Earnhardt. He was with Earnhardt Enterprises for years. And he's a very old school NASCAR guy. And he said, look, you're the team owner, but when you put that helmet on, you're the driver. I'm the crew chief, and that's the way it's going to work. Meaning, you've got to have that hierarchy, and I can't be sitting in the car playing team owner. In other words, you've got to know how that works. And I told him, I said, when I put that helmet on, it's all you. And to me, there's a comfort level with being told what to do. When you build this whole nucleus, and then you're sitting there with the steering wheel, you know what to do, you're being told what to do, and it totally, you know, it totally fits. It feels just right. So, which is kind of ironic. I don't know how many business owners could say that, but for me, it's been a great experience.
So you guys are in Talladega for tonight's race, which will be live at 5 o'clock on the Speed Channel. Bo, what's it like to go to these historic race venues and be on those tracks that just some of the great racers in the history of the sport have been on?
Well, it's humbling. You don't want to get out here and act like you're special or you figured out something different. I mean, all of the greats have been here. They've all been to Daytona. Last week, we were right up the road from Jasper in Salem. I mean, how many great drivers have come through Salem? So, to me, it's humbling, and you just got to always keep a very, very level head and realize, you know, all these guys that helped build this thing. So, it's special. I mean, to be at Talladega. Yesterday was my first lap around here, and you literally do. You kind of look around. You shouldn't be looking around. You shouldn't look around as much as I do. But anyway, I dig that part, man. I'm taking all the pictures of all the black and whites and all the old stuff. Talladega was built in 1968. It was built in 68 for a cost of $3 million. I read that yesterday. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, now there are motor homes over there in the driver's areas that probably cost $1 million. So it's just funny, but I love the history connected to racing. And anyway, that fits very well for Crosley.
And Bo, before we let you go, and we certainly appreciate you spending time with us, man. I love talking to you. It's been a long time. Actually, I've been able to follow you on Facebook and things, and I'm so excited to see you still being passionate and competitive. I guess I'm probably like some other people out there. What's your ultimate goal with this? What's the end game in all of this? Where do you want to go with this racing at this point?
Oh, you know, you've got to, in my shoes, be careful you don't go too far out on the limb. I want to keep improving, and, you know, we've got a long season ahead. This ARCA season's like 21 weekends, so we're only four in. So our goal for this year is to end up in the top five, you know, in the championship, which is, you know, that's a tall goal. And then beyond that, obviously, we come back next year and we're going to make a run for it. You know, to me, every one of these tracks we can win at. The short tracks, the Salems, the Elkos, Toledos, they're tough. I mean, you want to talk about going to school. I mean, up at Salem the other day, it was fantastic. It was great. But, man, did you go to school? Meaning it just happens so fast on those little short tracks. So, for me, if we can continue to evolve as a team, that in and of itself is a success. And as long as you can keep learning and keep having fun, I'll keep doing it. So we'll see how far that takes us, and never go too much further out than that when you're 50 years old, as you know. Let's just take every year with a smile and just kind of go from there.
Well, Bo, I'll tell you what, I'm one of those people that I truly am excited to see you doing. I love when people don't say, well, this is the next slot I'm supposed to go to at this point in my life. I love to see people say, no, we can do whatever we want. We can keep competing. We can keep being passionate. we can keep trying new things and go on to the next thing if we want to. And you're a great role model for that. And I really do mean that. I mean, you've been a friend of mine since high school, and I tell people all the time, my best friends were in high school and in my family. And although I've met many, many people since then and got to know some really good people, even though the seasons change, my friends from that period are still my best friends. And I really am excited for you. Good luck. Good luck at 5 o'clock at Talladega. And people, watch it on the Speed Channel and look for Bola Mastis to win this race.
There you go. There you go. Well, listen,
thanks for being with us, Bo.
Just as good as that. Many thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And you're right about the friend part. I mean, we all grew up together. We were so, so close. And even though it's been, I don't know how many years since we've all been together, nothing changes. Nothing changes. And you've got to love that part.
It's the truth. It's the comfort level never does. The experiences do, but the comfort level never does. Good luck tonight, Bo, and thanks for being with us.
Okay, thanks, guys. All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
That boy is a P.I.G. pig.
See if you can guess what I am now. I'm a zit. Get it?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We are ready for the rant, but right now it's just Coach K and Joe ranting, but I think we can rant about plenty, can't we?
Well, I'm not worried about being able to rant. We can do that. Hey, you know, I got a text message here, and then I want to go back and talk a little bit about some of our guests today. Not really ranting, but start with that. I got a text message. It's from Kevin, and he says, Coach, you talked about Carmelo Anthony not being able to get the job done. Can he get it done against the Celtics? Well, I'm going to stand on what I said earlier on a previous show and what I believe. Carmelo Anthony is his success, but also Carmelo Anthony is his enemy. And I say that because he is a receiver. He's a black hole. And the ball comes in, but it rarely goes out. And he scores a lot of points. I think he's averaging 30 points in these playoff games. But I think, you know, here's a series that the Knicks, I think, should have controlled all the way. And he's going to have his back against the wall. And if he doesn't distribute that ball a little bit and be the decoy in some situations, no, the Knicks aren't going to advance. And they're definitely a team that has all the potential to be successful in these playoffs. But Carmelo Anthony needs to learn how to be his friend, his teammate. Yeah, that's what I just said. His friend, his teammate, and not his worst enemy. And that's where it goes. And you've got Durant going tonight. Westbrook is out. And so they've had to play shorthanded. And I wonder how many times, Joe, they've looked back and said, you know, we traded Harden away. You know, they're up against Harden right now. And Westbrook's out. And, you know, boy, would it be nice to have James Harden on this team right now.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. I've got a text for you as well, a follow-up I get from Kevin and Jasper about Dante Exum. and I have taken a few seconds to find out who he is now, so I can discuss it a little bit. And his question is, as a Hoosier fan, it would be great to have Dante Exum come in next January and to finish out the season. He said, A, will it hurt team chemistry? And B, since he would only be there for that spring semester and probably declare for the NBA later, is Dante Exum just using IU?
Well, isn't that what we've got, Joey? I mean, isn't that what college basketball is becoming? It's almost becoming
become,
a fair trade business in a little bit lesser level and professionalism than the NBA. And I know there's people right now saying, Coach K's crazy. What's he talking about? Well, we're letting kids come in. You know, Andy Noblett, the athletic director at Jasper High School, who we talked to earlier, he talked about, high school basketball. IHSAA is about educational sports, education first. And that's what college always was for. And I think that's why the growth of the game of and the growth of popularity of college athletics was so huge, so big, and still is today. But when you do these kind of things where you bring guys in one and done, half semesters and done, I'm not saying that it's going to hurt your team. It all depends on the makeup, the mental makeup of your team, how you've communicated, as I said earlier in the segment, how you prepared them. When I was answering part of that question earlier, do I think he's using them? Is IU using him?
Yeah, I mean,
think
I
about
agree.
It. Is he using IU? Is IU using him?
Well, the talent that it sounds like he has, not ever seeing him, but reading just what I've read here shortly, he sounds like it would be a good deal for IU as well. So
I think that's what
both.
It's become. It's a deal-making situation, and I don't like it. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I catch some flack from people, hey, you say you like IU, but you're always on him. You're always on Coach Crean about stuff. I'm not on Coach Crean about. I think Coach Crean is a great recruiter. I think he's done a great job with the IU program. I have questioned at times different things, but I'm a fan. I'm allowed to. But I don't like this. I don't like guys being guns for hire. And you can say what you want, folks. You can say, well, he's not getting paid. Yeah, he is. He's getting a college education. He's coming in. He's using it as a vehicle to move on. I just don't like this. I want our young people. Earlier Schweigert, he talked about lack of discipline in our kids today, from athletics to the classroom to whatever it might be. I thought Stu was right on the point. And then I see big-time college athletics, and I see great universities. And Indiana University is a great university. And I don't care what anybody says. Purdue University is a great university. Michigan's a great university. When you allow these kind of things to happen, what does it say about your philosophy? What does it say about the foundation of what you want to be about? You don't want students... Listen, you don't want students coming to IU for a semester and leaving. You don't want kids showing up for a year and leaving. You want them to get focused, become not just a student but a part of the university. Universities, colleges, perpetuate themselves based on the people that come through their campus and become entrenched, ingrained, connected to their university. They are the people that will perpetuate the university going on by, one, sending their daughters and their sons there, two, donating to the school and keeping it vibrant, progressive, and ready to go. And I just, Joe, maybe I'm getting a little too far out here. You can try to reel me in if you want, but I don't like where this is going when this is amateur athletics. This isn't the minor leagues. This isn't the CBA. This isn't the instructional league. This is college. This is higher education. Folks, this is higher education. That's not education, coming in for a semester and taking off. The heck with what it does to the team. What does it say? What's the bigger picture here? What does it say about education in general? What does it say about the foundation, the principles of college, of learning at the university level?
Yeah, well, you know, I got to ask, out of all the one-and-dones at Kentucky over the last, what, 4 or 5 years, how many of them have went back and got even just one more credit hour? I mean, I'd like to know the answer to that. Of course, we don't know the answer. But, I mean, you know, I've always been a proponent that maybe these guys who leave early, and of course they're making millions, most of them, so who cares, should pay back their scholarship because they weren't there as a student-athlete. They were there just as an athlete. And, you know, kind of goes against what the student-athlete is supposed to be. And I wonder how many players like the ones at Kentucky that know they're leaving. I'm just saying, Kentucky, do they even go to class the second set last semester?
Well,
you know?
And we can say that about the regular enrolled student. He's not doing well. He's going to leave at the end of the year. This is it for him semester-wise. Maybe he's not doing anything either. But this is, I think, this is a bigger picture of what of the separation. And hear me out, folks. Hear me out. Before you rant back at me through your computer, hear me out. It's a bigger picture of the separation that is happening at the university level, the college level, between athletics and the educational part, the classroom part of the university. You know what? We use the word millions. Millions, Joe? Hundreds of millions of dollars pour through the athletic coffers.
Mm-hmm.
And used to build stadiums. And I do get a little frustrated when I see, even on the high school level, obviously Jasper was in need of a new gym. It fell in. But I get a little upset when I see, tens of millions of dollars being spent on bricks and mortar when I was in education and may be in again. That's not the difference maker for kids to learn. It makes it a little nicer, makes it a little easier, but it's not the instructional part. The instructional part is good teachers, the tools they need in the classroom, whether it be computers, chemistry, whatever they need, a place to sit, a place to feel safe, a safe environment, but not necessarily the fancy country club bricks and mortars. But my point is I believe there's a separation that's it's a widening gap. It used to be just a splinter. But now it's a widening gap between guys just showing up at college to play sports and people actually going there to get an education. And we still, in college football and college basketball, we still have a chance to get these guys a higher education before they go out into the professional world. You know, in baseball, they can go into the minor leagues and they basically can skip college altogether. But my point is, these vehicles still allow to get these guys to a higher level education, which if they don't make it on the pro level, and Joe, a lot of them are never going to make it on the pro level, a lot of them are never going to get a go, try out for a pro team. There'll be some, and we'll celebrate them. We'll celebrate the Cody Zellers and the Victor Oladipos. But there's a lot of guys that are never going to get there. Where do they go from here? They had a chance to get a college degree. They didn't get it. They had a chance to go into the world where they didn't make it in one area. They could step into another area and have a chance to make it. And isn't it about opportunities, Joe? Isn't that what really education is about? Opportunities. Education gives you opportunities to have more, to do more, to be more in your life and be able to do that for other people. We're getting way too splintered here. We're getting this huge gap between athletics and academics at the college level. And the NCAA president, Emmert, better get on this. He better get this under control because I don't like this. I don't like it at all. And coming in for a half semester, I'm not as concerned about what it's going to do to the team. I'm concerned about what it does to the whole idea of college athletics and what its foundation principles are.
And
We are now joined by Kurt Duxell, D.C. Broadcasting Sports Director for The Rant, Coach K. He's with us now, and maybe we can get his opinion on this. We might need to catch him up to speed on what we're talking about, though. Kurt, we've been talking about, we had a couple of texts about this Dante Exum who might come in for the spring semester next semester and possibly just play the spring semester for IU. And that's what we've been ranting about right now.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. What's happening?
Well, we love you, Kurt Duxell. We're glad you joined us. And I'll tell you what, I'm ranting. I don't care if somebody agrees with me or not, but I'm telling you, it's not what happens to the team. It's what are the foundation and principles of college education. I don't know that I understand it anymore.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with what you guys are talking about, but I know what your fundamental. And listen, the last couple of minutes, how it's going. But with all this, the horse is out of the barn because they charge money to come see this stuff. They sign a multi-million-dollar TV package with the Southeastern Conference in a TV network deal like the Big Ten has. The ACC is going to do the same thing, and it's so far away from student athlete, like they like to call them at those press conferences during the NCAA tournament. It's beyond believable. But that's just, and that's the way they want it to be, or they do something about it. So I get wild about it. You're getting wild about it. I don't know why we should worry about it because they don't. But it's just craziness. But you know what? Like we said before, we like the games. We like to turn on Saturday morning at 11 and watch it, and Tuesday and Thursday and watch hoop, and you know. But it's out of whack.
Well, and Kurt and Joe, I get all that. I'm still going to turn the TV on. I'm going to tell you that. But as I said before you came on, Kurt, I don't know if you heard or not, heard me say it. Education is that step, that door that opens, that gives people opportunity. I know it doesn't guarantee you anything, but education, especially at the university or college level, gives you opportunities to do something in your life for you, your family, or for other people, regardless of what your approach is, what your factor of individual is. My point is, we are getting so far removed from that on the college side. I know the money. I understand all that. But somewhere, the guy who runs the NCAA, he better get some help, because obviously he didn't do a very good job of making decisions. And he's letting this thing, you know, they go after the wrong things, and then they let all these other things just happen. And I guess it is because of the money.
Where does the problem? You talk about the educational process. When do the players or the students step up and do their part? I'm not one, like a lot of people are, to blame these coaches when their graduation rate is low. You're telling me they're telling those guys not to go to class, not to go to their tutors, not to get good grades? They may not be totally pushing it, but you know, at 18 years old, you had a responsibility to go to class. Ryan Milligan had a responsibility. Josh Schulteis had a responsibility to go to class and get their work done. And some of these athletes got all the resources in the world. And they're saying these days, if you go to play college sports, I don't care if it's golf to Alabama football, if you can't get your degree with the help, the resources that you are given, a lot of that has to come back on you, because the average student doesn't get those resources. And I'm one to say, hey, at that age, you've got this scholarship, you make something out of it. And like everything else, don't blame everybody else for your lack of commitment, your lack of staying in bed past your class time or whatever else. I mean, you know what I'm saying? When does it lie on the student athlete instead of the coaches or maybe the administrators or the president of the NCAA?
I'm not going to disagree with you that on that, Kurt, but I think the culpability factor is twofold.
Yes.
18, at 20, at 22, Kurt, think about yourself. you're a much different person at 45, 46, 47, yeah. 44 than you were then. And that's the guidance of the coaches, the assistant coaches, and the teachers. I can tell you on the high school level, when I had to, unfortunately, when you had to make your final cuts, no one likes to cut any player. No one likes to say, I can only keep so many and this is what it is. But we took responsibility as coaches at that point. We walked around. We checked with teachers on every player. We had them show us what they were doing in the classroom, if they were having problems. We followed up on them. We tried to make sure they were getting extra help. And you know what? If they couldn't do the job, they didn't play. If they couldn't do the job, they didn't practice. If they couldn't do the job, they didn't stay on the team. It's harder in football at the college level. I get that. But on the basketball level, it shouldn't be. But when we start telling our young people, oh, yeah, it's okay to come play a half semester. Oh, it's okay to be one and done. Now, when those guys don't make it, when those guys don't make it at the NBA, or they don't get a chance to go over to Europe, or they don't make it through the instructional league, sooner or later, one of these guys is going to get an attorney, a pretty smart attorney, and they're going to go back and he's going to have kept notes. He's going to have, this guy told me this, this coach told me this, they did this. We're going to see one of these guys claim that they were misled, mistreated. You know, in the United States of America, you can sue anyone for anything. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but you can sue for anything or anyone. At some point, somebody's going to say, this was a breach of promise. You told me that if I came to your school, this would happen for me, this would happen for me, this would happen for me. It didn't happen for me. And I know that sounds crazy, but this is the kind of litigious society we're in. But what I'm speaking to more importantly is the culpability factor has to be, what is college for? To get a higher education that will allow you opportunity in the world. If you are exceptional, you can leave college early on the academic side. It's been going on for years. I have a brother who's a radiologist. He had 3 years of college. He moved on to med school. There are great players that move on into the NBA. But at some point, playing for half a semester, I don't care what it does to the team. I care about what it's going to do to the foundations and principles of the university and what it's all about. And you can say, well, it's only one thing, Coach K. No. It starts. That door, you've seen it, Kurt. You've been around so many coaches, so many teams, so many young people. You're in the business world when you work with your advertisers. It just starts with that little door being pushed open a little bit. Then it gets a little wider, and people get used to it. Then it gets a little wider, and people get used to it. And before you know it, you got chaos, and you think it's normal.
Well, and part of this chaos, you're talking about these guys playing a half semester. That's insane. What is also insane, this deal they did a couple of years ago, that, you know, once you graduate from a school, you can go to somewhere else to play 1 year. That, you know, some of that stuff I don't really agree with either. If that's what the basis of the college experience is, to get a degree, then that's what you went there to do and you did. But we clearly, that's not what it's about. It's about going somewhere and playing that extra year so you can make that team better, so more people come to their games and they can charge higher prices. And that's, you know, but if you're talking about somebody coming in to play basketball or football for a semester, that's insane. And that shouldn't take place. And I can't believe a system that's in place could allow that to happen.
Yeah, and you know, for those of you who have come on to the podcast, you were listening to us live earlier, and then all of a sudden we went to podcast. We welcome you back. We're at the rants segment of the show, the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Coach K, Ken Schulteis, one of your hosts. Joe is with us in the studio, and Kurt Dukes, a weekly member, WBDC sports director, is with us on the rant. Kurt, we had a couple of really well, all our guests were great today, but we just got done talking with Jim Bo Lamastis, and you know Bo, you've known him for years. He's in the ARCA racing circuit. You know, I don't think you got to listen to his interview, but he said something that I thought was really said a lot about Bo. And you know, I've known Bo for years, and he was he could be a prankster and everything else, but a competitor, but a good guy. Great passion. But he spoke about something. You know, he's the owner of the team, and he's the driver of the team. But he talked about when it's time to race, like it will be tonight at Talladega at 5 o'clock this late afternoon at Talladega. What a great place to be racing. He has to become the subordinate. His crew chief is in charge. And mentally, emotionally, physically, he has to submit himself, go from owner to driver, and let the crew chief be in charge. And I think that speaks a lot for our listeners to if you want to get somewhere, if you want to find success. Sometimes, even though you're the guy on top, the boss, you got to take a secondary position and allow those people who are good at what they do, you have to trust them and let them do it.
Oh, I think that's an outstanding point, because no matter who you are, there's a very select few that don't have a boss or don't have somebody in your life, whether it be work or personal, that doesn't know more than you in certain aspects. I mean, there's very few of us perfect, and to open your ears and open your eyes to people that may know something or may have that gift to impart to you on stuff is amazing. And that's neat for Bo, because, you know, if he had all the answers, and he'll be the probably the first to tell you, he'd be on the NASCAR circuit right now if he had all the answers. But I find it great that he's relying on the Bo Dines of the world and the guys that have been there before to tell him, this is how you do it. And with your work ethic and the way you go about things, with their knowledge of things, it's going to work out. And I think we can all take a lesson from that, no matter what we do. But unfortunately, we've been around too many people in my work, in your work, that know everything. And that's when your company stops, that's when your operation stops, and that's where you stop as a person and don't grow and don't get better and don't do what you're supposed to. So, I mean, it's neat that Bo's doing this and he's following his dream, but he's also knowledgeable enough to know that, you know, we all need some help when we're trying to achieve things that we want to achieve.
Yeah, if you're going to get there, if you're going to get there, you know, it's kind of like faith, and I know we're not going to get into the spiritual part, although I think it's the most important thing in a person's life. You got to submit and have faith, and that's what Bo has to do. And you're right, Kurt, I think we've all been it. I know that I've made the mistake in positions I've held, and I've been in positions where people wouldn't allow me or others around me to do what they were good at doing, what they were capable of doing, because they couldn't, whether it's hubris, whether they're insecure, whatever it might be, they couldn't give up or let it go forward, and therefore they stall the project. You never reach your potential. You never get where you could have gotten to. And you know what the bigger effect of that is? It's all the people around that you could have touched, you could have helped, you could have done things for. They never get that chance, or at least it's delayed, because someone wasn't willing to do that. And I just thought it was a great point made by Jimbo Lamastis. And it's the wonderful part about sports. It's a wonderful part about being a competitor. You have a desire to get somewhere, and sometimes you just have to accept that you're going to have to take a step back and let someone else take the lead in order to get you where you want to go.
Yeah, that's great, and good luck to Bo tonight.
Yeah, 5 o'clock on the Speed Channel. Hey, we also had Stu Schweigert, great player at Purdue in football. And Joe, you know, I thought you had first of all, Joe, Stu is not short on words.
Oh, God. For a while, I thought I was interviewing you, and, you know.
My gosh.
But he made some great points. Kurt, he was talking about some of the things he's doing now, and I encourage people to, if you've just joined in or you joined in late in the show, listen to the whole thing on the podcast. But the thing he pointed out was what he's trying to do with John Goldsberry and different people that he's doing now, and the things he's doing is he sees that, you know, we always look and say, oh, this new generation, they don't know anything. I think this new generation is exceptionally smart, exceptionally talented. They're doing things with their minds and their hands on a computer that, oh, my gosh, I can't even imagine how they pick it up so quickly. But he talks about the lack of discipline that a lot of them have. Because we have so much today, and it's so easy to get what you want, that he and the other guys are not just trying to teach football skills, they're trying to teach life skills. Joe, I just thought he did a great job of talking about the importance of discipline and making sure there's discipline. Not you're grounded, not run 50 laps, not like those crazy coaches did and made those guys, girls get all the track. I don't. Did you guys see that where the track runners had all these blisters on their hands because they were? Oh, that was crazy. But well, back to my point. I'm sorry. I'm ranting and rambling. But discipline still needs to be an important part of all these young people's lives if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, he pointed out just as, you know, making, you know, he said, don't sit there and dream of I'm going to be in the NFL. He said, first of all, make you know, reasonable that, you know, thing. If you're on the JV, maybe you want to become a varsity starter. And you know, he was you know, I've known John very well. I've never met Stu till this week, but I mean, you know, if John Goldsberry and Stu Schweigert are the baseline for what all Purdue athletes are going to be like when they get older. I mean, I'm very proud to be at Purdue because they're both very exceptional guys. And he brought up some great points.
Well, actions, I believe actions trump intentions all the time. Intentions are great, and I'm glad when people have good intentions. But action is what makes those intentions come to life. So I thought Stuart did a great job on that. Kurt, what do we got going on around the area? What's going on with you?
Well, a little baseball. Well, actually, a lot of baseball. We're right in the middle of the season, and here in the beginning of May, it really kicks in. Actually, starting next week, there are just two more weeks of the regular baseball season left, so we've got a heavy concentration of that. Softball's going, track's going, boys golf, still going. So never a dull moment in the life of a high school sportscaster.
And speaking of all those things you have to do, I know we've talked about in the past, you're a big Celtics fan, and your Celtics are trying to hold on. And I see the Knicks. Give me your impressions of the Celtics in this playoffs.
Well, they have so much trouble trying to score. I mean, an aging Paul Pierce, an aging Kevin Garnett, a team without Rajon Rondo. And they're just doing everything they can, whether it be drawing up plays, just trying to squeeze every amount of offense that they can get against a team like the Knicks, who's younger. They're probably more talented, but, you know, something is to be said for a veteran like Paul Pierce or Kevin Garnett or, a veteran coach like Doc Rivers. But, you know, the Knicks, speaking of not being humble, that stunt they pulled riding the Celtics off after they were up 3-1, that probably didn't go off very well in the Celtic locker room. Not that, you know, guys are pros. They don't. Bulletin board material usually doesn't mean a lot, but, you know, to a proud team, maybe it did in this case, and they're battling. I mean, they go back to Boston with a chance to, even the series up, and then you get in that game 7, and anything can happen. The Knicks are just very immature. I mean, that's the bottom line, the way they approach the play, the way they approach that off-the-court deal the other day about all the plaque because they were going to the Celtics funeral or whatever. That just shows immaturity, and sometimes having the veteran crew, even though that the time has passed them by a bit, sometimes it's a little better to have that than some immature type of ball club. So hopefully the Seas can get it done, tie the series, and head to Game 7.
Well, that just takes me back to what I've said about Carmelo Anthony all year and in it throughout his career. I mean, I really think it's a lack of maturity, understanding, great score, don't get me wrong, great score, great basketball talent. But I don't know if he still has truly come to understand it and folks, I know he's better than me. You know, I'm sure there's somebody saying, I'm going to text Coach K and say, well, you can't play as good as him. I understand that. But he needs to understand how you go to the next level. And it's not being just a receiver. It's being mature and being a leader and getting your guys to follow you and to do the things they need to do to accomplish the goal. And see, the Celtics understand that from the coaching staff to the aging veterans. That's why they scared the heck out of the Heat in the past. I mean, this is a team that physically doesn't match up as far as ability and youth and energy, but mentally the Celtics get it. And boy, could Carmelo Anthony learn a lot in this series if he's paying attention.
No, most definitely can learn a lot by listening to his head coach. I don't think Mike Woodson signed on off on all that craziness that they tried to pull the other day. I mean, you got your own locker room, a guy that's been there, that's been a coach this week. You got people in your organization, a guy like Patrick Ewing or guys in the past. You think they tried to pull stuff like that on Larry Bird? You know what I mean? They just went out and played and did not know what's going on around you and not looking at history and just being a professional. That's the bottom line in some of these cases. Learn how to be a professional, and as soon as you do that, good things will start to happen. When you mix that professionalism with the talent, you know, and that's what I have a lot of respect for guys like LeBron James or guys like Dwayne Wade, because after a while, they get it, and you think it would have been got by Carmelo Anthony and some of those guys here with the Knicks, but it hasn't. So, you know, if they lose, so be it. I'll be happy.
Yeah, and you know, if this thing gets tied up and it heads back for Game 7, guys, this isn't 1970. The Knicks don't have a great history in the last 25 years of those clinching games. They just don't have a great history of that. So it'll be interesting to see. We had Andy Noblet on, athletic director of Jasper High School, earlier. He says the progress on the gym, he expects it to be open for graduation. He felt very positive about the facility, the whole process, how they started it, how it will end up and be finished. Have you had a chance to get in the gym?
Yes, I have, and it's outstanding. As a basketball, volleyball venue, it's been long overdue. Nobody wanted to have what happened to the other gym, but this is going to be great, and I think it's going to mean a little bit more to the fans to be able to go to a gym with a better situation as far as seating. Hopefully they show back up after a 5 or 6 year absence of not coming for whatever reason. But hopefully they'll come back and enjoy their time there. But that gym is going to be great. And I think, you know, they're doing things right and, you know, getting a lot of input. So, yeah, I agree with Andy, and he's doing a great job of, you know, setting things up where it's functional for coaches and the athletes themselves. And that's the bottom line. Those guys or girls are going to be the ones, and the coaches are going to have to use it. So they got their input, and, you know, they've taken from other gyms that other people have liked because of the way it's set up. And I think they're going to have a nice place to play basketball and volleyball because, as you know now, they don't need a multi-purpose situation. They needed that back in the day when they needed to have gym class and needed more floors, but they got a nice auxiliary gym. They've got a cabbie gym to go if they need to. So now this can be a event type of gym for fans and for players. So, you know, it's going to be really nice.
Yeah, I think it's going to enhance the experience for everybody involved. And what I really like, it goes to what we were talking about earlier. The people who know what they need to do, they went out, they got the information, they put it together, they made concessions where they needed to make concessions, but they were the people that knew what needed to be done. They were the people that understood we don't need a boxed PE facility for games. We need a community arena where people can play and people can watch, and the experience is enhanced, and it helps when the insurance money's helping to pay for it. But the bottom line was, the people who needed to be making the decisions got to make the decisions. And I got to tell you, if that happened more often, even though there will be second-guessing, you know and I know, Kurt, especially in the DuBois County area, there will be a lot of second-guessing. There won't be much that's credible.
No, it's going to be because again, they got the input, and you know they really went about it in the right way. Because you know sometimes it's not wrong to admit maybe I don't know how to build a gym, or I don't know what where the coach's offices and the training room should be, or how this concourse should be laid out. But go to another school that it's worked successfully for 10 or 12 years since they built their gym. Let them tell you what they like and didn't like. And before you know it, you've eliminated a lot of the bad and you've enhanced the good part of these gyms. And it's outstanding. What I gained from being out there, you know, they don't let you build the in-ground Southridge, the Lagodies, the Orleans, the Evansville North Old Gym, like Boonville, like they used to. But this is as closest thing that you can get to one of those type of gyms, kind of like a Coliseum type of feel, a bleacher, you know, Bankers Life Fieldhouse type of thing with the pushbacks and the things at the top. So it's going to be really neat.
Well, they've got two beautiful gyms in Jasper from a standpoint of playing and watching basketball in the Cabbie and now the new arena. Forest Park has an excellent gym site. Southridge, of course, has one of the great sites. Washington, I mean, for a fan, for a sports fan, basketball, you know, there's a lot of great venues in the southern part of the state as well as all over the state. And
well, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Well, I already got into this with Andy because that's where this next rub of all this realignment is going to come in. Southridge, they are used to hosting a tournament in 2A. Now they're going up to 3A again. They had a little hullabug with Washington over rotating the 3A sectional. That's going to be some contention. The baseball will be a contention between League Stadium and Jasper. I don't think they think a lot about this when they realign some of this stuff. I mean, did Jasper and Southridge have to be in the same sectional, or did Southridge have to be in the same sectional with Washington where they could have kept these venues alive for everybody to enjoy? You know, in 2A, if Southridge gets into that 3A mix, where do you have that 2A basketball sectional? You know, if the 2A schools can't use Southridge every other year, I mean, like they did in the past when Southridge was 3A. You got to look a little bit down the road, and I think some of these, that's where the real, you know, arguments are going to start within these schools. And maybe it's not their fault. They're just put in this position. And if you're an AD, if you're a principal, if you're a board worth your salt, and you stick up for your own coaches, your own players, and you try to get any sport you want on your home floor. And maybe you'll get some, maybe you won't. But to sit there and look at your coach in the eye and say, well, we made a deal and said, you know, well, we get the baseball, but we let them have the basketball or the girls' basketball. I'm hopping mad if I'm a coach at that other sport. If you got the facilities, which Jasper's going to have, you got the facilities like Southridge is going to have, or Forest Park, you don't do what's best for the other schools in that sectional. I know it sounds harsh and that sounds cold, but you take care of your coaches, you take care of your patrons, and you take care of your board.
You're trying to get the advantage. And, you know, what you're saying resonates so much with me because the Don Noblets, the Joe LaGranges, guys like that for years as principals down in this area, the Ray Racers, they lobbied hard up at the IHSA. They made sure they served on as many committees as they could because they wanted to make sure their schools and their areas, when they couldn't be their schools, but their areas got in the mix, got in the discussion, and had the opportunities. And Don Noblet was wonderful about it. And my dad and I talked about this the other day. Don Noblet always felt like, host as many. If these guys don't want a tournament, we'll take it because it puts our teams in a position to maybe be successful and win it. So you gotta put yourself out there and make sure you're in the room for the discussion. Otherwise, you're going to get left out.
Well, yeah, and we all know they're going to do what they want. But if you let it out there, maybe they're not aware that you wanted to host this thing or that event. But put it out there if you want to do it, and I think you owe it to your coaches, you owe it to your fans to try to do that. So that's, you know, I've been around this the last few years, and this stuff happens. The deals that these schools make before they even get to the meeting with the other schools in the sectional, or, you know, hey, we'll get this if you vote for us on this. And two or three of your sports are left out in the cold because you made a deal with somebody that's not capable of hosting the event that they wanted to. But you've made the deal with them, and now, you know, they get what they want, and maybe you're left out. And again, you owe it to your people to stick up for your coaches and your fans.
Yeah, I agree. Joe, what else we got on the docket, buddy?
Well, you know, we've got boys baseball, Kurt. You know, I tried staying up for this and watching you on WJTS last night, and I've been so busy this morning, I've not been able to check. How did the Jasper Castle game go last night?
Well, it was a ball game in which the Wildcats needed a win against a good team. They lost to Cathedral, they lost to Jeffersonville, but they were looking for a win against a good team, 4A, number 2 Castle. They were able to take care of them 10-1. They got a big game from Mark Giesler, two-run homer. Kyle Kruger hit a grand slam, and they won 10-1. Giesler pitched a five-hitter, so they kind of got a statement win. They're trying to move guys in and out of the lineup, and due to injury, due to some code of conduct stuff. So I think they were pleased with the win last night.
The old code of conduct. You know, every year around this time, a lot of sometimes over the Christmas break when sports, and I don't know what the code of conduct situation is, and I don't care, but it just happens. You know, coaches work so hard to get their teams ready to play, to make sure their kids are doing the right things, and young people do dumb things, but what they don't realize is the impact that it has on all those people around them that have worked so hard, and it's especially true in athletics. You know, you love to go with the idea of next man up, but to the young people listening that are playing sports, listen, folks, listen. You have a responsibility to yourself, but you also have a responsibility to your teammates, to your coaching staff, to your family, and to your community. And the things that you do off the field, in the classroom, outside the classroom, have an impact on what happens to everybody on that team.
Well, that's no doubt about it. Joe, thanks for trying to watch the game last night. I appreciate that. I've been told more than one occasion I help people fall asleep. I don't know if that's good or bad with those 10 o'clock re-airs.
Yeah, I made it through about three innings, and then I woke up and you weren't on anymore, and so I turned the TV off. So,
well, that's good. But yeah, we got Jasper Southridge tonight on BDC at 6 and at 10 on WJTS. So, having a good night. Coach Murphy's going to join me for the game. So,
Kurt, I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, is this really going to be a good game?
Southridge,
come on, Kurt.
No. If it plays out the way it's supposed to, it won't be. But Southridge has got their top two pitchers going. They're 12-4, 11-4, and I don't think it's going to get out of hand. But if Jasper comes to play and they got their pitching lined up like they want, I think it'll be, you know, pretty good for the Wildcats. But you never know. So we'll see what happens up here tonight. But it should be fun. Good crowd on a Friday night, and looking forward to it.
I'll probably listen to you. I just go out and get in my car, and I can get you clear as day and listen to Kurt Guksel making the call.
Well, that's good. So glad you can do that. So,
see, I'll be up in Jasper anyway. So, guys, I got to go jog because I had a donut this morning with my 5 cups of coffee. And just one. But it only takes one now in my life because I'm not out there working it like you are all the time, Kurt. I mean, my 3 miles is half walk, half jog. So out there running 10, 15 miles. Joe's running 10, 15 miles. I'm not there yet.
No, Joe's the fitness guy. I mean, I wish I had the dedication and the willpower that he has. I'm happy for Joe. He gets it done.
And the high blood pressure that you have to run because you have the high blood pressure too. So, but
I did out jog him the last time we jogged. I did out jog him.
Hey, really? You know, as Missy Krimp told me, a 1 mile at a 7 minute pace or 1 mile at a 14 minute pace is still just 1 mile.
It's all good. And you know what? And Kurt, you can speak to this. Jasper is a great community. A lot of communities have these things, but Jasper has that great river area to jog or walk along. And if you can't enjoy exercising in that community, boy, you're missing out.
Well, of course, yeah, it's a really nice area down there. And I don't know if you guys touched on this or not, but Joe, coming up on May 30th, it's a Thursday night, we'll have a perfect opportunity to ask Coach Tom Crean about oversigning, because Crean, Fred Glass, and Kurt Miller will be at the IU tailgate at the Riverwalk.
Well, you know, I would hope that I can get I don't know if I'll be in attendance, but if Coach K wants to, I'll give him my mini disc recorder, and maybe we can get an interview with Coach Crean then.
No, well, you should be there, Joe.
I'll take care of that if that's what you want. That's no problem. But that should be – I was just talking about the Riverwalk. That'll be a neat thing to have that down there.
Oh, yeah.
Have all those coaches and people, and it'll be neat. And I know, you know, all the other colleges have golf outings. Purdue has their Gus Grissom, and Indiana State has their deal up at Muni. So that's what summer usually brings, a chance to get some of these college coaches from whatever university up here to break it down.
Kurt, do you get the opportunity at those types of events and the one you're talking about, do you get the opportunity to be in a position where you can ask the tough question, or is it more, hey, it's more general and all the people are around and you really don't get that? Because you don't want to – I don't want to put someone on the spot. I do want to ask the tough question, but I want to make sure it's in a position, in a location where – you know, he doesn't feel like, you know, all these people around here and I'm being asked this question. Is there a media opportunity to ask questions?
Yeah, they always set something up, and you get your one-on-one if you want, and it's just how you handle it. I don't know how you do this when you interview Coach, but you lob them the softballs first, and then your very last question, when you want to wrap up, you throw the hard one in there, because if they get mad, the interview's over anyway. So that's a little cue to you when you start interviewing, if you want to ask the tough questions. Do it at the end, because you've got all you want as far as the softball's over early. But that might be the oversigning or whatever may be something that you might want to ask at the end. So if he storms off, which I don't think Tom Crean would, you've already got the 5-minute interview taken care of.
Well, we'll let Joe handle all that, because he's got so many things he's mad at Crean about that he needs to be there and get on him about it. So.
Well, you know, we go back to this, you know, this, half a semester deal, or this, guys going somewhere for their fifth or sixth year as a graduate student, you know, and you can talk about Korean X's and O's all you want. And I'm just not saying this because it's Korean, because there's 20, 50, 100 coaches around the country that are making sure their guys go to class. And what they've got going, what they've got in place with this summer school deal, where not only they work out, they go to summer school. Well, they're in the position to leave early if they want. Or if they want to go to another school, they can go. And that's one thing I can't criticize Crean about. He's on top of this academics, and they've got a good setup in place up there. In fact, all schools do with their tutors and their academic advisors. So I'll never say anything about Crean with the way he approaches academics, because he's never going to get in trouble, which we hope not, or, you know, fans hope not, trying to skirt academics, because – I think he's figured it out, the way to win some public, favoritism, or get the public behind you, is kind of take care of it. And I think he does a great job with that. And like I said, there's a lot of other coaches doing that. But he's putting his guys in position to graduate. And Knight did that, and all kinds of coaches did that. It's not just him. But I think he's out in front on all this, which I think is really cool. And they can't come at him about that. I mean, they can argue X's and O's all you want, but I think this is something he's doing right, and he knows how to play it, and it's his benefit.
Well, Kurt, I'm not going to argue that point with you, and I'm not going to question his integrity on that. I'm just saying I don't like the gap that is being created between the academic and athletic side, and it's not just about going to class. It's about what kind of commitment is made at the university level and the core principles and values of what the university level education is all about. Obviously, we've all got one. It has served us well when we've allowed it to. And you just hope that many people can get the same opportunity and take advantage of it. So, but sometimes folks, people need direction during that process. They don't. It's not always automatic to everybody. And the one thing I've learned about having three kids, what's automatic to one is not automatic to the other, is not automatic to the other. And I'm sure my mom and dad, that's why they had to hide once in a while, because they had nine of them trying to figure out, you know, what's automatic, what's not.
Well, I'm glad Janet's in charge of that household. That's all I'm saying. I'm just glad your wife is in control and got everything under control down.
Okay, folks, we're gonna wrap this thing up. We appreciate our guests we had today. We had Andy Novelt, of course, Jasper High School. For you listeners out of state, we were talking about the gym that the roof caved in a couple years ago, and that process has been taken care of. We talked with Stu Schweigert, great player at Purdue, went on to the NFL and is giving back to the community, also has an indoor football team, and we ended up, we've had Kurt on here. We ended up talking with Bo Lamastis, ARCA Racing, 5 o'clock. He'll be racing today at Talladega. And those listening to podcasts, check it out. Go to the ARCA website, see how Bo did. Kurt, it was a pleasure having you again. Always love your input and always love your knowledge.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And the show's great and get a lot of good feedback from it.
Joe, what do you think, buddy? Have you said your piece today? You did a great job with Stu Schweigert.
Well, I just wanted to remind people to check our website, www.CoachKandJoeShow.com, to see who our guests are next week. I do have one that's lined up, Mitch Stetter. Talked to him for about 5 minutes yesterday, and he's on the West Coast, you know, he's always on Pacific time, and he finally told me next week we can get him on because he's in New Orleans, so he's closer to our time zone, so he won't be sleeping through the Coach K and Joe show, which I don't know how he can do. He should wake up and listen to it, but he is going to be on next week since he'll be playing in New Orleans, so we'll be able to catch up with him. I know he's playing for Salt Lake, and, you know, he's 3-0 with a 3.27 ERA and doing fine and looking to make it up to, you know, to help out Albert Pujols and the Los Angeles Angels real soon. But Kurt and Coach, thanks for being on with us this week. And
quick update on Jasper Golf Team, coached by your brother Steve Milligan. Can you give us a quick update, Kurt, how they're doing?
Kurt would probably be able to help us better more with that. Is he still there?
Brother's golf team?
Well, I coach Little League 3 nights a week.
He doesn't even follow his – they're doing quite well. They're highly ranked. They're playing great golf. My nephew, Jacob Bartley's on the team, and they've got an outstanding team. We've got several teams down in this area. Evansville Memorial has an outstanding team, and they're all playing well. I just want to put Joe on the spot a little bit. You know, Joe, come on.
Well, every year, I could have said, you know, they're highly ranked and they're doing really well because every year they do. So, I mean, I could have used the canned phrase, but I was honest that, you know, the Jasper Little League Dodgers are struggling right now at 2-5, and, you know, we've been spending some extra time.
Neither is any of our listeners, but Joe. We're done with the show. Hey, you people be blessed out there. Go out and support athletics. Go out and support community projects. Give back and you'll be getting. There's no doubt about it. Joe, take us home.
And for Kurt Duxell and Coach K. Ken Schulteis, I'm Joe Milligan saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K. and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K. and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.